Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, November 9th, 2015. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern Time to midnight. If you're listening over another network and you would like to ask a question, make a comment, our call-in number is 605-562-3140. Our participant code is 385-698. If anyone would like to email a question, send it to questions, that's plural, questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can see their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support National Liberty Alliance's effort to save America. Also, please support National Liberty Alliance by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right side. Okay, we're going to start off God's Word, we're going to read tonight out of Matthew chapter 7, verses 1 through 14. So Matthew chapter 7, verses 1 through 14. Judge not, that ye be not judged. For with what judgment ye judge, ye shall be judged. And with what measure ye mete, it shall be measured to you again. And why beholdest thou the splinter that is in thy brother's eye, but considerest not the log that is in thine own eye? Or how wilt thou say to thy brother, Let me pull out the splinter out of thine eye, and behold, a log is in thine own eye? Thou hypocrite, first cast out the beam out of thine own eye, and then thou shalt be see clearly to cast out the splinter out of thy brother's eye. Give not that which is holy unto dogs, neither cast ye your pearls before swine, lest they trample them under their feet, and turn again and rend you. Ask, and it shall be given you. Seek, and ye shall find. Knock, and it shall be opened unto you. For everyone that asketh, receiveth. He that seeketh, findeth. And him that knocketh, it shall be opened. Or what man is there of you, whom if his son ask bread, will he give him a stone? Or if he ask a fish, will he give him a serpent? If ye then, being evil, know how to give good gifts unto your children, how much more shall your Father, which is in heaven, give good gifts to them that ask him? Therefore, all things, whatsoever ye would that men should do to you, do you even so to them. For this is the law and the prophets. Enter ye in at the straight gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the way that leadeth to destruction, and many there be that go therein. Because straight is the gate, and narrow is the way, which leadeth unto life, and few there be that find it. Okay, that was Gospel of Matthew, chapter 7, verses 1 through 14. Okay, tonight we have a paper we're going to read. It's pretty short. It's only 2 pages. And it's focusing in on SWAT. It's an information. We sent it to all 94 federal district courts last week. It's being sent by fax to every elected state and federal individual in the nation. And on the state and federal levels, I think I just said that. And so we'll take a look at this. Again, all 94 federal district courts. And it's an information reference to an open letter, information to all elected and appointed servants from the full bench, directed to the judges of the court at Nisi Prius and all law enforcement agencies. The purpose of this information is to inform in the hope of reforming and to prepare for potential indictments upon all elected and appointed servants who refuse to comply with the law of the land, also known as the Constitution for the United States of America, and thereby continue acts of subversions. Take judicial notice. Silence when you have a duty to speak is fraud, and thereby acquiesces to the charges through the vault. Those servants who make it nearly impossible for we the people to reach them may think that they can claim ignorance of acts of subversion and their complicity, but they will soon find themselves both sadly mistaken and held accountable in courts of justice. Any judge who does not comply with his oath to the Constitution for the United States wars against that Constitution and engages in acts in violation of the supreme law of the land. The judge is engaged in acts of treason. Cooper versus Aaron. Use of SWAT teams upon the people other than known violent criminals is an act of terror and vindictiveness against the sovereign people of the United States of America. Labeling people as sovereign citizens and claiming they might be dangerous incites violence against we the people. The 2 police officers in West Memphis, Arkansas, that were murdered on May 20, 2010, was a single act which never repeated, because there exists no such organized group called sovereign citizens. The term itself is rejected by most people who discover their sovereignty, because they mistakenly believe that calling themselves citizens would subject them to the jurisdiction of de facto vindictive courts. All servants be forewarned that sending a SWAT to break down people's doors in the middle of the night and hauling them away in shackles to places unknown because of claimed unpaid bills by the IRS or because they claim they are sovereign in violation of the people's unalienable rights and punished under 18 U.S. 241, conspiracy against rights, U.S. 18-242, deprivation of rights under color of law, U.S.C. 42-19-85, conspiracy to interfere with civil rights, USC 42-18-86, action for neglect to prevent, USC 42-18-83, civil action for deprivation of rights and high treason. We the people, under our own authority as the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, intend on indicting all law enforcement agents, judges, and elected, appointed, and employed servants who join the conspiracy to injure we the sovereign people of the United States of America. We will further hold all parties involved responsible for attempted murder if any weapons are discharged, dogs killed, or injured. If any death occurs, even because of an excited medical issue, we will seek murder indictments. It is not necessary to allege or prove that the defendants intended to deprive plaintiff of his constitutional rights, or that they acted willfully, purposefully, or in the furtherance of a conspiracy. It is sufficient to establish that deprivation was a natural consequence of defendants acting under the color of law. Eldridge versus Rodos. The court, November 5th, 2015. So we sent this out on November 5th, which was last week, 2015, and it went to all 94 federal district courts. And again, we are faxing it out to every elected official on the federal and state level. So all courts, all judges are receiving this both on the federal and state level. Okay, let's see. We're going to move on now. Gerard, are you ready to go forward?
Yeah, I am. You know, Paul from East End Rare Coins was going to talk, but, you know, I don't know if he's here.
Well, let me open the queue for Paul. Paul, if you're here, let me go into Q&A. You're here, hit star 6 to get into the queue. Paul from Long Island, star 6, get into the queue.
There he is,
631.
Okay, I'm going to...
Nobody else into the queue.
Am I on?
You're on. You're.
Hi, guys.
You got the floor.
Okay, thank you.
What's new and exciting?
I just wanted to give a few... there's been a lot of economic news and you know, for people's edification, whatever. I know everybody reads, but there's a lot going on. There was a very favorable jobs report last week. Of course, you know, it was a government report, we must remember. And they conveniently keep 95 million people out who have stopped looking for work. So, you know, you've got to take these job reports with a grain of salt. But it does provide the basis for them to start raising interest rates this month, because it's their contention that means the economy is stronger. In reality, the economy has only grown 1.5% this year, which is pathetic. And out of that 1.5%, it's really only grown 1%. The rest of it's strictly because of Obamacare. So that's fictitious also. We are going to approach $20 trillion in debt by the end of next year. The only way out at this point is to tax us into further submission, take everything we have. And trust me, they know everything you have. Severe hyperinflation due to downgrading the currency. Regardless, it's you know, next year is going to be a critical year in your planning to protect your assets as best you can with this government running rampant. Remember, again, I know I sell it, but gold and silver transcend the times. When there is inflation is when gold and silver are like racehorses. And that's when everybody wants it, and that's when it runs up. And again, I point out, it's still, relatively speaking, cheap right now. Gold is to protect your assets. Silver is to spend. And you're going to have to spend. The way it's looking, we are going to we're going to see $20 loaves of bread in our lifetime, and the same way you thought you'd never see a $5 loaf of bread. There's just no way out of controlling this debt, except you know, the shell game that they've been playing, that's been going on forever, always had underneath at least one of the shells the strength of the dollar, the intense strength of the United States economy. But now these shells, there's nothing under any of the shells. And the Fed knows that they have to raise the rates. The economies of the world and our economy are not going to be able to stand it. Even though it was a favorable jobs report, just the inkling that would trigger a rise in rates, you know, caused the stock market to go down that day on a favorable report. So they know it's coming as well. So, you know, I just want to tell you, you know, this is the time to start protecting your assets and prepare yourself. You know, you're not going to want to be doing it when it's off and running, trust me. Although I've been doing this 33 years, and unfortunately, when things are at the highest prices is when the phone rings off the hook, unmistakably. And I've been telling people for 33 years, you got to buy it when nobody wants it. That's when you buy it. So J.P. Morgan is up to 22 million ounces of silver they've purchased. Goldman Sachs is up to 7.7 tons of gold. They're doing it for a reason, obviously. Okay? They know what's coming. And unfortunately, you know, when I talk about one way out of this is taxing us into submission, you know, you got to remember, they're buying all this gold and silver with basically our money. You know, they're buying it at 0% interest. And they're buying as much as they can while interest rates are non-existent. You know what? If they screw up, they got us to bail them out, right? We've done it before. But they know what they're doing. They always do, unfortunately. So I just wanted to let everybody know what's going on. I think next year is going to be an extremely important year. I think the whole thing's going to start to unravel. And I don't think there's going to be any containing it. You know, so I know it's a rough time of the year, but again, prices are low because they're keeping the futures market down for now, and that cork's going to unpop too eventually. So you know, always better to do something than nothing. Just keep yourself prepared. And I do want to add one more thing. When I point out that they know where everything you own is, the IRS comes after gold and silver dealers a lot. I've been audited 4 times. I came through all of them, you know, shining. But they knew everything. They knew more than I knew. They knew about my first 10-speed bicycle when I was 13 years old. It shocked me how much they knew. I do want to let you know, if nothing else, just remember, your gold are the last thing you can invest in that's between you and you. It's the only thing that's private that's left. And for how long, who the hell knows? Okay? And I want to thank everybody for the time, and always feel free to call about anything. I'm always willing to talk to our members. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Paul. Nice. Good report. Okay, so this week we're going to go to the state people and let them tell us.
Yeah, I think we're
going
to start off with Gary. I think he wanted to talk first, and then from there, goodness, who else is next? Well, he'll tell us who's next. I think Nathan's going to talk tonight, but go ahead.
Right. Okay.
I'll be happy to help you with that. We're going to have a little bit of a format switch up. We're going to start talking to some of the committees that we've been setting up. And the first guy that I'm going to want to bring into the call is, in fact, I would like to clear the queue. All right. And I would like for Robert Overhill to please do the star six to unmute yourself and then hit one to go into the Q&A queue. Robert Overhill is a Michigan State coordinator. He is also our sheriff committee guy, and I picked him because he's been after his sheriff for a long time. And I'd like for nobody else to please join the queue. I'll be having other people come in that are going to be related to the sheriff committee. So
right, and after we go through these updates from all these people, then we'll open up the
yeah,
Q&A. Everybody should wait off until going into the queue.
We're
going
to do an open Q&A a little bit later. So, Mark, you will have your chance. But Robert, I'm going to unmute him now. Robert, are you there?
I don't show that you unmuted him.
No, well, he still shows mute.
He still shows mute.
Okay, so let me just check the box that I'm going to go with. Let's see. I'm going to go with the next question then, I think. Robert.
No, you're good. You're good.
There you go. No, he's good, yeah.
Hello.
I thought I was able to unmute the other people in the Q&A queue at the same time, I was hoping. But I might be mistaken. But Robert... Robert, kind of, if you would talk to us a little bit about the sheriff specifically in your county, if you would, as to how long you've been talking to him, sheriff's booklets, until finally the guy says no.
That's about it. Yeah, I've been talking to our sheriff here in Van Buren probably 8-10 months. We started out. Made an appointment, got to talk to him, and the first time out I brought just a few of the Constitution handbook and a few of the common law handbook, which is includes the sheriff, the bailiff, the justices, and I don't know what other in there, I forget at the time, but anyhow, I went in and sat down with him. I purposely on the jurist handbook, at the bottom of page 5, it starts in about the sheriff, and I dog-eared the top of page 5 so that when he picked it up and opened it up, he would be there. And at the bottom of page 5, it says, just 1 second here, sheriff, top cop. Enlighten you a little bit. He did not know that. And here is a 4-term elected sheriff, which told me he didn't know his oath of office. Well, after about an hour and a half on our first meeting, I got invited back. Second time I went and seen him, I took 100 Constitution handbooks, and I took about 60. Full order of the common law handbook and gave them to him. And after that, I met with him 2 or 3 times. We had a couple of breakfasts together here and there, out of the way places, out of the area, so it'd be a little private. Always had another fellow with me. He is another NLI member from Van Buren. And we got into some pretty heavy discussions, everything about, from the sheriffs and their mode of operation on arrest and one thing or another. And we wound up meeting, like I said, 2 or 3 times. Through the time, months, it kind of tapered off. And so... one time I went over there, just not too long ago, and sat waiting for him for 3 hours. Finally, the jailer, the county jailer, bailiff, he came out. His last name was Hunt. And he finally told me the sheriff wasn't there. And I said, oh, that's interesting. He says, how long do you guys think you're going to let me sit out here? I said, I've been here 3 hours. Yeah, you know, so that kind of told me a few other things. I had originally thought, after got invited to leave all the handbooks, that, hey, maybe things be okay. Don't count on it. I've since learned, since I've been getting more involved in the sheriff's end of things, I got to figure that almost all sheriffs east of the Mississippi are suspect, and half of the west of the Mississippi towards the west coast, they're pretty good. You got some out there that have kicked the feds off the property and one thing and another, and some of them told the courts they won't enforce anything outside of the Constitution. So that's a good sign. Got a few names, a few fellows. There's one fellow out of New Hampshire who wants to run. We're getting a few things along those lines. But that was about, you know, my status with my sheriff at this time. I'll be perfectly honest with you. I'm going to run. I've got my ballots. I've started getting them filled out. I'm going to run as a no-name constitutional sheriff, and that's where I've ended it as far as Van Buren County. If our sheriff comes up to me and says, hey, look, you know, maybe in the future we can have something to sign for him to sign, whatever, just something to say, oh, yeah, I'm on board. Fine. You're off the hook with me. But that's the way I'm starting to look at it. And we're going to, pretty soon, we're going to have a few other things for him for the Sheriff's Committee. And that will be a weekly meeting. But that's not too far away. Working on it.
Well, question for you, Bob. On your Sheriff Committee, are you going to be, you know, teaching people how to communicate with their sheriffs?
Sure.
What do you see as the first thing that people have to learn when talking to a sheriff?
Well, first thing, get yourself an invitation to meet with them. Second, be courteous, be dressed properly, but yet be sure to express your police with a positive attitude. You know, just be a nice guy. And then, well, after you do that, why, I usually follow up right away, and assure them that NLA will be behind them 100%. And the only thing that we ask, or kind of would ask, is their allegiance to the Constitution and remain in good behavior.
Had you heard about that cop? I believe it was a police captain that was recently arrested by his sheriff because he joined the CSPOA.
You mean the county sheriff's organization?
Yeah, Constitutional Sheriffs and Police Officers Association.
Right.
A sheriff was arrested or a captain?
A sheriff arrested police captain.
Yeah.
We should look into that.
There's a sheriff that
to investigate that.
Yeah, that's a big
sheriff
deal.
That has to have somebody run against him.
Yeah, look, we need to make contact with that sheriff and the captain, but first we need to know what's going on, so hopefully we can find a volunteer that will investigate this for us, get a hold of Gary, let Gary know that you'll take a look into it, maybe a few people will look into it, and let's dig some info. I'd like to ask Robert a question. Robert, was it in your county the sheriff that went out to execute a seizure warrant, I think, of property without the due process?
Yes.
Okay, and we need to go out and deal with that. Maybe you can work out some affidavits with some people down there, get some things together, and let's go after the sheriff.
Well, okay, sure.
I mean, this is, you know, we don't want to go after sheriffs per se, but, you know, someone that's going to do this and just ignore it, and they're being shown the Constitution, and we're explaining to them due process, and they just go out and take property without the proper papers, with no due process at all. We need to deal with it. So let's, and I think we have that person whose property has been taken or is being taken. That person, I believe, has filed for habeas corpus. So we'll really be able to put the pressure directly onto the sheriff, real hardcore. But we need to get information. So why don't you and I try to communicate about this tomorrow, maybe? And,
yeah, I think Max Brewster may have some information, and we can probably ping him tomorrow.
All right. Yeah, if Max is on tonight, give me a call. If not, we'll look him up tomorrow. But okay,
yeah.
That's all I had for Robert.
All right. Now,
John, to final with you, yes, you're correct on that. But what really fired me up was the one before that down in Berrien, which an action was filed against the judge. And not through NLA, but on kind of the same principle, but NLA's name was not used in it. And 2 weeks after, the action was filed at the circuit court judge. The chief circuit court judge quit his job. He was a young judge, 60 years of age.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm sure they're kind of feeling the heat a little bit.
Well, they should be. We are pressing a lot of paperwork on them. We're doing a lot of affidavits. We're about ready to go out. We're priming them to let them know we're coming out with indictments. And the next paper that's going to go out, I think we'll have it done this week. We're working on it, and we'll read it next Monday. Hopefully it'll go out by the end of this week, or maybe the beginning of next week at worst case. And it really is a primer for judges to let them know we, the people, are coming. And so we're going to put the pressure more on them, and now we're going to start going after clerks too, because clerks that don't file, that's the key. But we are getting a lot of good, positive response, a negative way, in the sense that they're complaining, they're moaning, we shouldn't do it, we can't do it. But then we, you know, you read between the lines that these people are talking about, and you discover that they have fear, and they realize that something's coming their way.
Right. Also, John, what's a good time, you and Gary, tomorrow?
Well, tomorrow, late morning is good.
Okay.
Yeah, it'll be good for me.
All right.
Now, before we let you go, Robert, I think we have a VoIP dialer, Lily. Lily?
Robert is on the West Coast, right?
No,
Robert is Michigan.
Michigan,
okay.
Yeah, Lily, did you have a question for Robert?
No, this is more for John.
Okay, actually, wait. Those will be open calls later.
Okay.
All right, okay. What about Mark? Did you have a question for Robert? I'll take that as a no.
Okay.
And last but not least, we have North Carolina Jay. Did you have a question for Robert or regarding the Sheriff's Committee?
This is Jay from North Carolina. I sent the article on that sheriff that got fired, or the police chief that got fired by the sheriff. I sent it to Gary, and I sent it to John. John, I sent it to you email through John at Liberty Alliance on your email, and I sent it at 11:40 Thursday night, so you would have got it.
Okay, yeah, I didn't get deleted it, but I don't know.
That's Central Time, so you would have got it at 12:40 Friday morning.
Yeah, no, I checked my mail, and I didn't see anything, so...
would you do me the
Gary,
favor?
Gary,
could
you
resend
it
to me?
I sent it to Gary at Liberty Alliance at the same time. You would have it at 12:40 Eastern Time Friday.
Jay, would you please resend that to me?
Yeah, if you send it to questions at National Liberty Alliance, it goes to three people, so one of us will get it.
Yeah. Yeah, please send it to questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. That might
questions with a plural. S
yeah, questions.
Wait a minute. This sheriff arrested who? A police officer?
He fired the police chief. Went to the CSPOA and signed the document to uphold the Constitution. And when he got back, the sheriff fired him, let go of him and his whole police force for concerting with questionable organizations.
Yeah, but the sheriff doesn't. I find that very strange because
none of these
states acknowledge the power of the sheriff, and here you have a sheriff that's acting like he knows the power of the sheriff, and he's abusing the power of the sheriff. I don't get it. Look, they've been dumbing the sheriff down for years. All they want them to be a paper boy for the courts. They don't want them arresting anybody. They want them running paper around. So now you're telling me you got a sheriff that's firing a police chief. I don't even know how he does that because the police chief is hired by a municipality. The sheriff has no jurisdiction over him. He could have arrested him and indicted him. That would be a different story.
Well,
I Jay, actually, I found it, Jay. I do have it. I have that article. This is
okay.
JZ.
Okay,
you got it. And I'll make sure it gets into the right places.
Yeah, drop it in my Skype.
Because I'm driving right now, and it's hard for me to do things while I'm driving. But
pay attention, Jay. We don't want to lose you.
Yeah.
But yeah, Gerard, I sent it to you like 2 days later because I sent it to the wrong address. But I sent it to you at your live address.
Oh, at live? Okay, I'll look and see if I can find it.
But if Gary has it, you guys can all get it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very interesting. It's very topsy-turvy, upside down. Doesn't make sense from what we normally see.
Uh-huh.
Because they don't like to give the sheriffs any authority, and I don't know how a sheriff would claim authority over an office. We've been saying that all those police officials should be under the sheriff. You mean to tell me there's actually a state that puts them under the sheriff?
Well, he got hassled by the TSA on the way, and on the way back they took him aside and a Fed approached him, and they held him for half an hour, asking him questions about the meeting he was at and everything. And then when he got back, he and his whole police force were let go because he took the oath to uphold the Constitution. That's what it says.
But the sheriff took that same oath. That's quite hypocritical.
Well, they may be playing word magic with that. Because
Or did he?
Exactly. Or did he is right.
And if he did, he is impersonating a sheriff, and he is he's trespassing a public office.
That's crazy. Well, my guess is the feds ordered the sheriff to do it.
The feds got no authority, but you know that would make sense.
Well, you can read the article. I sent it to you guys. Gary, make sure they get it.
Oh yeah, I sent it. I've already sent it around, and I'm getting a lot of people asking for it that I'm sending it to right now as well.
Okay, all right. That's all I had.
All right. Thanks. Well, then tell you what, I am going to clear the sheriff's queue with a thank you to Robert.
You're welcome.
And so I'm going to clear the queue, everybody. And the next person we're going to call is Robert Bristow. So if you'd be so kind, Robert Bristow only. He's the chairman of our, please, Robert, go into the queue. Robert is our welcome committee chairman, as well as a district coordinator, as well as a state coordinator. If there's a hat in the NLA, he's either wearing it currently or has it on his mantle. But I actually fear right now that Robert got hung up a little bit late in a funeral that he was involved in today. So I'm going to have to...
I'm here. I'm fine, John.
Gary. All right. All right. Yeah. So, yeah, thank you. So, Robert, tell us a little bit about your inspiration with this... well, wait a minute. Oh, yeah, that's Robert. Robert, you joined in on the... You're a moderator. There we go. I was freaking out for a second there. But tell us about your welcoming committee.
Well, first off, good evening to all my friends out there, and of course any others that might be out there too. Good evening. We're revamping the the welcoming committee because it hasn't been accomplishing what we wanted. And when we're done, it's going to be, I think, the most important committee that we have. It's going to have an effect on all the other committees as far as membership, and it's going to have an effect on the civics course and you know, the numbers taking it, the numbers completing it. It's going to increase the knowledge of our members immensely. And I say this because we have a training plan that all new members will be taking. It will be teaching us, all the new members, about the NLA, what we're doing, how we're doing it, and we are teaching them the website, where to find everything, teaching them what the benefits are of being a member, teaching them about the service course, strongly suggesting that they take it. Even if they don't want to be an administrator, we want to strongly suggest that they take it because it will give them a lot of new thinking. It will teach them you know, about common law and the Constitution and a lot of different things that they really they may think they know, but once they take the course, they're going to know a lot more. But we're gonna do this training program, and it will be one-on-one rather than one person trying to teach a whole big group of people. It's going to be one-on-one, and it's going to be, first off, at the time, we do have a few welcome committee members who are calling people and starting to get busy with it. However, and I'm going to hear some groans on this, but you'll feel better when I'm finished. All the lead state coordinators will be welcoming committee. Yeah, now you're thinking, oh my God, they want me to call everybody. They're going to want me to do all this. I've got my duties as lead coordinator and all this. Well, here's what it is. You won't be the ones doing the calling. You will be assigning other people from the various counties because we want to have someone from every county within your state as a welcoming committee. Use your other state coordinators. Use your county organizers, whoever that you feel is qualified. That way, the lead state coordinator just has to make sure that the weekly spreadsheet gets sent in to us so that we know who was called and what the status is on all of them on a weekly basis. And once the training on the backlog that we have right now with new members is complete, then we will start going back to people who have been with the NLA for a longer period of time and bring them up to speed on everything. And what this is going to do is it's going to give everybody a sense of ownership in the NLA. It's going to promote people being more willing to talk to people and bringing more members in. It's going to make people feel better. I mean, right now, somebody joins the NLA, and they might sit there for a month, and nobody talks to them. They don't know where to find anything on the website. They don't know what's happening. They don't know what's available. And they get discouraged. They go inactive. Maybe they drop off. Well, from now on, they come in, they get contacted immediately, they get into a training program, they learn all about who we are and what we're doing and how they fit in and what they can do to help us make it better. And they will feel a sense of ownership, and they will be involved, and we will be flying through with more members. We will be growing. And now this is going to be ongoing, and I expect it to smooth out as we go. Maybe we'll hit some slippery spots and find some things that we have to tweak a little bit, but we won't miss a beat. We'll keep on moving, and we'll tweak as we go. And
Well, if anybody has any questions or comments while we have Robert, they can go into the Q&A and feel free to have a discussion if they would like. But Robert, did you find that what was the driver? What motivated you? I mean, I know that you and I were talking, and I know I had some thoughts. But what really grabbed you and motivated you to do
that? Well, I saw that nobody was doing anything. Everybody needs to have a job. I mean, you come into an organization, you want to be a part of it. But they had nothing to do. Nobody knew what to give them. I want them to be busy. I want them to feel like they belong. I want them to be a member. I want them to help us. But they got to know how.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't happening. And so now everybody's going to be involved.
That's great.
That is the driving force, is to get everybody busy, everybody participating. And they will once they know how.
That's great. Now what I'd like to do is I'd like to begin, if I can find him real quick, is with Tanner in Oklahoma.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good, Tanner.
Real quick on the welcoming committee idea, I think that's awesome. I've got one guy in Oklahoma lined up that I was going to try to help us get started with that. But I was wondering, with the training that we're going to be doing, and Gary, kind of what we talked about, are we going to still kind of press forward with maybe some YouTube videos or short educational clips and things like that to kind of keep people in?
Well, that is the media committee. And, yes, that's absolutely a part of that committee. The welcome committee is welcoming everybody to the NLA and teaching them what we're all about and what's available to them and what the committees are that they can join. And we're going to be finding out what their strengths are and how they can best help us. And,
so it's going to be a more personal deal, not any videos.
Right,
really.
It's going to be one-on-one training, and that's a whole lot better way of teaching somebody, is one-on-one teaching. And,
so it's going to be kind of like mentors and train the trainer.
Right. And they'll grasp it much quicker. And if they do have a question, they can get it answered right then. You know, where if you're in a large group and trying to get into the Q&A and ask a question, you may get in, you may not get in, you may not get your question answered. But the one-on-one, it will be answered.
And so how will that work with the states like mine, where we don't have, you know, obviously there's more people to revive, but in the meantime, as we're reviving them, say we don't have every county field,
we should be able to get to that. I don't expect you're going to have somebody in every county right away, but that's going to be the ultimate goal, is to have somebody in every county. What I do want is you to work as a state coordinator. I want you to strive to get some other people helping, because I don't want you having to do it all yourself as a lead coordinator. I want you to overlook it and be able to keep it moving. I'm going to rely on the lead state coordinators to keep this thing moving. And if there's any issues that come up, I want to know immediately. And that's going to come from you, the lead coordinator. So I want you to have your people in the state working on welcoming the new members. They're going to have to be, maybe get a little bit of a training from you, anybody that's been with the NLA for any length of time should be just fine with, they should know what's involved with the training. We do have it written out. We will provide it to all lead state coordinators, which then you can provide it to the others in your state.
Well, thank you very much. That sounds very helpful, and I'm on board as usual. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Tanner. And we have Ed in Oklahoma.
I've spoken
with
Ed.
Gary, yeah. All you have to do is hit the next question. Just hit it once. And
I could have done that. You're right.
Just hit, right now, just hit next question once. Okay, now hit it. Now, Ed's already there, so you have to go outside to mute Tanner. We'll mute him. I'll mute him for you right here.
Ed, I've spoken with. How are you doing, Ed?
I'm doing awesome. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine.
Awesome. Well, again, I want to thank everybody for all your efforts, and I'm really excited about this Welcome Committee idea, because I'm actually one of the examples of that. Because I joined at least a month and a half ago, and I really never got contacted by anybody, and I was kind of left in the air. I was excited about it, but I didn't know what to do. When I started to take the course, I had gotten contact with excuse me. My first thing I did was I contacted Tanner. He's my state coordinator. And he's the one that actually filled me in and everything and kind of got me started and gave me some insights. And he spent some time with me, and that was great. And that really motivated me to move on. When we discussed this, you had said that you were going to have some, you know, some of the answers to the questions that I had with you that time. And you just exposed them. And it's really awesome. Because, I mean, if I had that material and I had that material to pass, I mean, I have like six people that I've been talking about, close family, friends, and associates that I'm talking to LNA, all the time about. So I'm ready to rock and roll, and I'm really proud to be part of this mission.
I'm glad to have you, and we'll get you moving real quick.
I appreciate it, man, and I appreciate everybody else. So thank you very much, guys, and I'll be on the boat here.
Thank you.
All right,
let's see here. Okay, Jody in Michigan, did you have a question or comment about our welcoming committee?
Gary, when I was listening to Robert, I think his idea sounds really wonderful. I know because I'm kind of crawling around at the beginning, too, trying to figure out, get oriented. But it also kind of triggered and reminded me of something called triage. Is anyone familiar with triage? With, like, priorities, like you set your priorities. And I can see that coming out of the welcoming committee. I don't know if you guys have, like, a triage committee. And I don't know all the circumstances and, situations that, you guys all have been into and been dealing with this all along. But it just kind of seems like a triage committee would naturally come out of the welcoming committee. As far as, like, prioritizing, what kind of situations people have as far as how dangerous they are, how time-sensitive they are and such. Would that fit in any way?
Yeah, why don't you give Gary a call? Why don't you give Gary a call tomorrow, and I'd like to get in on this call, and let's discuss the possibilities of that kind of a committee.
Yeah,
sounds
nice.
Like a good idea if you want to help us spearhead it.
Well, what's interesting. What Jody is suggesting is really very much on point, because when you look, and as I do, at each person who joins, you take a look at their introduction, and you take a look at their comments field. I would say 6 out of 10 people joining are CPS. I would say that 2 of the remaining 10 are wanting help with a case. And the other 2 are joining. They're very interested in wanting to help, but just don't know what to do. And those are the people that we're kind of like really hotly looking for. But the welcoming committee can direct the people to the IRC team where they can get their papers into the queue, you know, being instructed to get their intake done. So, you know, Jody, you're right on point.
Yeah, well, that's good. Yeah, but you guys, you know, have to get together, and it's going to be like an ongoing kind of growing, you know, ever-changing situation depending on, you know, what people bring in. But it'll come together, but, you know, I think it's a good place to start. I think it kind of fits in right here, and I'm willing to do what I can to help you guys, but, you know, I mean, I'm good at organizing, but I don't know what all you guys have to deal with, and you know. But I'm willing to help.
Well, who should she contact, Gary?
Well, she can contact me. She and I have been in contact quite a bit.
Hey, right, we're looking definitely for good organizers. We desperately need organizers. That is the key to what we're doing.
Well, here's the problem: Jody's connectivity. I already had Jody targeted to be our project manager. But her availability, I mean, her accessibility to a computer and such would preclude that, which is very disappointing. Because Jody from the medical field, where they definitely put everything into priorities, painfully, literally.
Well, we actually have a couple of triage teams in operation right now, whether you know it or not. IRC has its own triage because they listen to the story. And there's a hierarchy of what's going on. Like we say, you know, anybody that's in jail, they take precedence, that type of stuff. I mean, and of course, you know, depending on how they get their paperwork done. But then Gary's been running another one where he actually looks at the person, what they put in, figures out what their skills are, and then sort of directs them into an area where those skills will fit. We've talked about this in the past, how when people come in, we try to direct them into the right place. And that's kind of a triage also. You know, I mean, in the strict sense of the word, the IRC is really a triage. It's like an emergency room. You know, you leave the guy with the splinter in his finger, and you go to the guy that has an artery busted. You know, that type of thing. But it's operating in each committee. But, again, you know, You have more focused triage, and then you have a general one. And that's what we need to do to bring, you know, to take these people and put them with people that will work in the different committees. Right. And look, when John and I were organizing early on, what we found was that you have to contact people personally by phone. I mean, we went running through the whole state doing meetings. Look, you need a couple of people in every county. So, you know, you go to the Liberty groups, you set up a meeting. You know, as you bring new people in, you let them tag along. That's part of the learning process. And I think it's really good if you get them taking the civics course. As they're taking the course, they're becoming more and more knowledgeable. And then as they go out looking for other people, like that one fellow said, he has people in his family, this, that. That's perfect. I mean, that's how any multi-level marketing company works. You go, you talk to your friends and family, and you get them on board. And as you learn, you explain the system. That's how we need to operate. People need to bring the system and explain the system. And look at it. If you have a problem, you go to your upline. You go to Gary. You go to John. Right. You go to me. So that's what we need to really have people understand, that we're going to set out a helpline, and they can go out there and do it. They don't have to worry about knowing everything up front, but they just need to know where to go to get the information if they don't have it.
Yeah. Well, that's something
Jody in with Linda tomorrow.
That's something that the welcoming committee will be doing, is being the first to contact and find out what those skills might be. And when we see something that we might be able to use, then it will be passed up the line to, like, Gary, and see what he wants to do. So maybe we do need somebody that, like Jody, to pass that on to. And she can determine where to send them.
Yeah, that could work. All right, well, thank you very much, Jody.
Okay, I want to still stay in the queue for later for open, because I got a couple more things I'd like to discuss, so just so you know, okay?
I actually can't. I'm sorry, Jody. I'm going to have to kick you out.
Oh, I mean, right now.
It's the way this thing works.
Yeah, no, I mean, I understand right now, but can I get back in later for a couple questions later?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Yeah, there you go.
That's what I meant. Okay,
all right, thank you.
You,
Jody. Okay, now next, I I don't know if I can pronounce this, you know, Auntie something or another.
Oh, yeah, that's my handle, but it's Ginger Schaefer. And I was, I called in last week regarding not getting a welcoming call or email or anything. And so I'm still waiting.
Yeah, we're getting up to speed. Ginger, okay, do you want to be on the welcoming committee?
I think I need to winnow in, and I need a little bit more.
Is it like you got to wash your hair?
Acclimate first, Gary. She's got to learn about what we're doing and get an idea of what's going on and see what
Thank
she wants
you.
To do.
Get your moment, Ginger.
You
I don't she, mind she's sweat, Ginger.
She's making the case for the welcoming committee to get active.
Yeah, but
there
Ginger,
you go.
I mean, actually, I've thrown 400 people into the welcoming committee queue. It's going to be literally impossible to get through all those people. And you guys, good news or bad news, you take it your own way, but our membership is climbing. Yes, every now and again, someone will say, I want to quit. But by the time we find one person who wants to quit, we got 10 people joining.
And it's going to climb even faster here in a little
while. It's going to be climbing even faster because, you guys, the word of our habeas corpus is out. We just got to get ready, and I don't forget, what was that scripture? You know, the watchman on the wall is sleeping, and here we are. We're getting ready to start approaching success, and our membership is sleeping, and we're kind of hoping to start reviving and waking up, because here we are. I know we've got people ready and waiting and hoping to be grand jury administrators, but right now we need people to actually help us get to that point. So, and that's what we're talking about now. So, Ginger, I appreciate, I see where you're at. And we'll be getting to people. So, thank you, Ginger.
Okay. Great.
Now, all right, I'd like to go on to the next, to the last person, which is only going to be a short one. I'm kind of sticking this guy in, I'm kind of cheating a little bit. But California JP has been my right-hand man and director of gathering and doing the research and consolidation of the information. Now, guys, before anybody thinks anything, let me just tell you something. The information that we need needs to end up that I can copy it and paste it into our fax program. This fax program needs to be told which column is the fax. So if you start looking at it that way, we need to have information coming in a certain way. People, they're very helpful. They'll send us information in a text file. And it's vertical, where you have a column of information about each of the people, the elected officials. And we need to take it to the next level. So we not only need people that are researchers and able to find people on the web, we actually need people that are a little bit more savvy, people that can learn how to use Microsoft Excel or to do Microsoft Excel better. But with this, I'm going to turn you over to California JP to talk about the information that's coming in and how we can hopefully maybe get some more people coming on board to help. JP, go ahead.
Hey, everybody. It's JP from California. Well, we have some good news here. The page on the website has been updated, and now we are at the grand total of 192 files missing. Believe me, it's a good news. We were at 298 about 3 weeks ago. So everybody smiles. I mean, it's a great deal. I love it.
That
anyway,
is great.
It is wonderful. So The thing is that in order to look at that page, because it's a small photographic area that gives you what states need to be worked on or not. Oh, by the way, Mr. Robert Bristow, I helped you state by coloring in green three little squares here. I got your assemblies done, your house done, and your sheriffs done. Anyway, you go highlight directory, and then on the left column, look for the tab elected official status page. Then click on it, and it will bring you some kind of a painting that gives you all those colors where, I mean, lilac is giving you a fax number missing. Green is completed 100%. And the white one with a one inside of them are the file missing. And there is an area that I would like to stress a little bit. I don't know why that page is reacting like this at this time. But it's the district attorneys. We need to work on those files. I'm going to go back to my original file. There's a I need to call. By the way, Carl, thank you so much for posting those things, those files every week. We try to update them every week. The thing is that if we could get some of the district attorneys, that will add roughly about 2,000 faxes to our list. So, and I got quite a few missing.
I mean, if we could get people to go take a look at that page.
Yeah.
And then if they're willing to maybe take a couple of those, you know, sections that are listed as number one for their state, go take a look at that status under directory, elected official status. Take a look there and see if there's something missing in your state, and we're willing to help train you on how to get the information, format the information, so that we're able to then consolidate it with the rest of the information. That way I can take each state, all of their elected officials, consolidate them together in one compiled sheet that I can import into the fax server and point to the same column for the fax number for each individual. We're cooking with gas. Right now we're kind of all over the page. So just getting the list of information is really not good enough anymore. We need people that are able to take this to the next level. And so if you are willing to be trained a little bit, because Microsoft Excel is not that hard,
and I can help. I can help too. I mean, I can really walk you through it, and it's not that difficult.
It's not
the other thing, I wanted to congratulate Kansas State is one fax away to being 100% complete. Kansas.
Wow, Kansas.
I need just one fax number for the U.S. Marshal. It is absolutely beautiful. You are the first state. The second one would be Utah. The third one would be California, but there's a blackout over there in California. So, I mean, we are getting close. Some states are getting really close of succeeding in having a complete information system, the best of all.
Hey, you know, JP. So. Have we been collecting any sheriff emails, or do we have any?
Well, we as far as sheriff, I'm still at a standstill with only a few states that are incomplete.
With emails, are you
so,
collecting?
So the answer,
emails?
John, is yes. We have a lot of states.
Yeah, emails, of course, with emails.
Yes.
How many sheriff emails do you think you have? I mean, I got about 2,600, but obviously I'm missing about.
No, I got more than that.
Well,
I have more. actually, to tell you the truth, well, it's not true. I have a lot of sheriff. I have more than 3,143. I have something like 3,158, I believe.
Okay, but, I'd like to. How about marshals? Do you have marshal emails also, or FBI?
Marshals. I'm waiting from Lori from Connecticut to send me the marshal list.
And they are gathering also emails, correct?
Yes, they are.
Okay, why don't you and I connect tomorrow sometime? Let's get on the phones my time late afternoon. I mean late morning for your time, early morning or something like that. And let's. I'd like to get that list, or just drop it in my Skype.
Yeah.
The list of sheriffs and whatever you have on marshals and whatever you have on FBI now, because I want to start really pumping out the emails also as much as the faxes. We had one sheriff who made a complaint concerning that it wasn't a legible fax, and hopefully that's not too often that happens. But we're working on that particular problem. But if we email them as much as fax them, we're sure to get them the copies of these memos.
Well, I have Tanner. I know you're on the call. I need some help with Oklahoma. That's for sure. For some reason, in my roster, I only have sheriffs for your state, and I need some help with that state. I need some help with South Carolina. I discovered my list of sheriffs was corrupted, and now for some reason there was some additional information on that page. When I clean it up, I am left with 20 sheriffs missing. So this is bad. South Carolina, I need help. I don't know if anybody can hear me out there. So,
and if somebody is willing to step up, just send an email to Gary@NationalLibertyAlliance.org with research in the subject, and I'll get you to the head of the class with JP.
Oregon, I've been working on your state, Robert. So I hope you love me now. Anyway, the thing is that New York is a good state. KY. And Louisiana, Kentucky and Louisiana, we need help, you know.
So all right.
Just look at that little colorful spreadsheet, and then you know where we stand. So.
All right. Well, we have so far he's an anonymous caller. I don't have a name for him. I just unmuted you. Do you have a question or comment or regarding the research? I unmuted you.
Yeah, that would be 305, area code 305, but I don't know if he's
all right. I'm going to move on to the next one, and that is going to be, oh, wait a minute. Let me actually go.
It looked like 305 was trying to talk there.
Oh, okay. Let me go back to 305.
Hello, this is Donna.
Yep.
Hello, Donna.
How are you this evening?
Doing good. What state are you in, Donna?
I'm in Florida. I'm down in Broward County, Fort Lauderdale area.
All right, Donna, go ahead. What is your question or comment?
Well, I have someone that's been telling me about your habeas corpus. Did I say that right? And we have a fella down here that's in jail. He's in jail for driving without a license.
Donna, wait. Donna, would it be possible that you go into the general Q&A?
I am in the general Q&A.
Well, no, we're not at the general Q&A yet. This is specifically regarding research where we're interviewing.
Yeah, but just so she don't get lost on this, let me just real quickly answer. You want to do is you want to go to intake@nationallibertyalliance.org. Just send, email. Well, actually, the little smiley face on the right-hand side is a frowny face, really. And it's holding up a sign saying help. Click on that, follow the instructions, communicate with intake@nationallibertyalliance.org, and they'll give you all the info that you're going to need and what's required in order to do a habeas corpus. Okay?
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Got it.
Thank you, Donna. Okay, let's now go to
Let me say something before you switch to the next caller.
Okay.
This tool, because this is the only tool we have for crying out loud. This is the only tool we let the people know what we are about. Am I right or right?
Oh, yeah, you're right. You're right.
The thing is, unless this tool is complete, we, the NLA, are not efficient. It is absolutely imperative, that everybody starts to work on these files. I mean, I don't know if I'm clear. I hope my French accent is not disturbing anybody.
You're very clear.
The thing is, we need to work on this file.
This
is the only tool we have.
It's all we got. All right, I'm going to be bringing in now Debbie in Virginia. Did you have a question or comment regarding our research for elected officials?
Actually, it's Curtis.
Oh, hi.
This is Curtis. How you doing?
Doing good, Curtis.
What I was trying to do was just let y'all know here, Virginia, we're working on this list here for PJ. We've updated some of them. I just haven't sent them in. I've got me one of my fellows has finally gotten some time. He's helping me as well. So hopefully by the end of this coming week, we should have it pretty well covered. Some of the things are just simply not there. Our state officials, the cabinet, like the governor and the attorney general, they've got a system where they want you to fill out your information. They want to identify you before they'll give you access. They're not getting their number, but you have to provide information to get a fax or an email on them. So those two we're never going to get.
Excuse me. We have all the governors. We have all the state attorneys. I mean, the U.S. attorneys. Don't worry about those guys. What we need in your state is the state court, the court clerks, right? And we need the attorney generals. That will be, and the address for the sheriffs. That's, actually, don't worry about the address for the sheriff. Just get me the attorney general, state courts, I mean the court clerks, okay, for your state, and the district attorney for your state, then you're in good shape.
Okay, well, I'm just saying that the attorney general for the state of Virginia, we're not getting him or the governor, but the others, we're getting a lot of them, most of them.
Okay.
If they have it. All right. The mayors may take us a little bit of time to do, because we got a lot of counties here. We got 134 counties in this city.
Yeah.
I know it's tedious. You know, by the way, I have a new email address. It's JP for Jean-Pierre, JP@nationallibertyalliance.org. So you can email me your results right there.
Excellent. All right,
good deal. Super.
Thank you so much, sir.
All right, and next I'd like to go to a name that was mentioned here. We have Oklahoma, Tanner.
Hey, I heard that you said that we didn't have some stuff. I know we had the sheriffs, but is there any way you can send me an email, JP, with what we're missing so we can get on that? I know Jenny was doing a lot of lists, but she's working on habeas corpuses too, so.
Tanner, I have your email address. It'll be my honor.
Oh, well, thank you, sir, and love the French accent. Just keep it.
Very nice.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tanner. And we'll wrap this up after this next one here, which is, I think I may have already done it. Oklahoma Ed. There we go.
Yeah, how you doing, guys? This is Ed again. I had done some research, and I have the Stevens County Sheriff's name and address and phone number, no fax, and also a website.
But I did not call because I'm actually unaware. Like, I mean, I don't know if I should call just to, like, what to say. And, you know, so I am going to need some kind of, like, a script that, you know, I need to use. And then how to, as you said, to process this to you guys, send to you guys. Because I also do have a lot of these senators and governor and congressman numbers and addresses as well that I can send to you, but I just don't know where to send that all.
Well, you got the answer. Is jp@nationallibertyalliance.org. On top of that, I would suggest you coordinate with Tanner because you don't want to double do the work. Do you get that?
Yeah, no, I do. I remember last week you pointed out somewhere on the website, I forgot where it was, and I went there and I looked what needed to be done. I know you needed senators,
it's very
stuff
easy.
Like that.
It's very easy. If you go on the NLA website, you would go and highlight the directory.
Right.
And then once you're on the directory, just click on the left column on the elected official status page.
Got it.
And then when you click on there, I think there's something wrong. Carl is a wonderful man. I think uploaded that page. Oh, no, it's working now. So you have a at the bottom of the graph, you have a left and right cursor, and on the left, I mean the right of the page, you have up and down. You need to keep it on the upward position. Then you can just navigate all over the place.
I got it right in front of me right now. We need the senators and representatives, which I have. I don't have the court clerks yet, and I don't have the district attorney, which is what we need. But I have just about everything else on there. I just need to know how to and just send it to you, a regular email? How do you want me to do that?
Send me emails at jp@nationallibertyalliance.org. I want you to know, all of you guys, okay, I'm really retired, but I'm not retired yet. I am self-employed, and I made myself some kind of a job that leaves me a lot of free time. And for some reason, I took a very, very important interest into creating that tool. I love the NLA. I love the idea behind it. I love the habeas corpus. I love the fact that we are here to help people. I want to help, and I'm going to finish this work and create the best database of all elected officials in the county. If you read my drift.
Amen.
So the thing is, I'm here for you. Please abuse me.
Here we go.
Here we go. Abuse me.
All right, well, thank you very much. Let's just kind of end it right now with the last one in the queue. We have California Fred. Did you have a question or comment or offer of help for research?
John, if you're still there, I just wanted an update if there was any concerning the paperwork filed Monday a week ago.
Okay, wait, hold on. We're gonna start the general queue in just a moment.
Yeah, as soon as we finish up here, we'll take you in first. I'll call you to come in.
I'm gonna clear the queue up to Fred. Up to Fred. So JP, thank you very much for your help.
Thank you very much. I yield. Thank you.
All right. Okay, now I yield over to Gerard.
All right, well, before Gerard takes it over, let me talk with Fred here. Yeah, Friday we sent, I think it was Friday, pretty sure it was.
It was Monday a week ago.
Right, hold on, I'll have to double check, but we did send out, well, I may have sent out another paper since.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm pretty sure I did on Friday, we sent out a contempt of court and also an opportunity to amend, and mm-hmm. we gave them a warning concerning any abuse to the prisoners, your son and the other gentleman. And did you get a copy of that?
No, I haven't. I'll check
okay,
with Byron.
So probably, I don't recall the lady's name. It was a difficult name. What was her name?
Manya. I'll check
okay,
with
Manya,
her.
Manya, probably, if she didn't get it today, she'll have it tomorrow.
Okay.
Okay, and then I'm sure she'll email or fax or however she
all
sends
right.
it to
I'm,
you.
I'm certain they're going to default, and I just wanted to see. I didn't know what the time schedule was. And I'll just check back with you Monday a week.
None. They've already defaulted. The default is over with. They need to release the prisoners. We knew it was going to be an uphill battle. We do know that they're not happy with things as from conversation with you and with Monia.
Yeah.
And we might have spoke to someone else. I don't remember. But in any event...
Byron Gessler.
Okay, yeah. They are not happy at all. And the fact that they want this to go away and everyone to stop means that they're nervous and they're concerned. So we're going to have to make them more nervous and more concerned. And again, we did give them the warning concerning any abuse that might take place and that we're going to be right on top of this. So with this opportunity to amend, we want to give them at least 7 days. So we'll wait till next Friday, this coming Friday, shall I say, before we start thinking about what we may do, and maybe over the weekend we'll see where we go from there. We don't want to rush too quick into actual indictments because that's where we are heading. We are priming them for that. Next paper going out, which is going to go out maybe on Friday or the following Monday, is going to be on the fact that we are coming for judges, and we're alerting the FBI, we're alerting the marshals and the and the FBI to let them know openly this is our intention, and we're going to do it with due process and properly through the court process, and it's going to be up to them to actually execute the authorities to make this work. But again, it all has to do with a lot of education involved here too at the same time.
Okay, well, that's a good update, John, and I just want to continue to make you in prayer and encourage you and esteem you highly before the Lord so that no harm comes to you and that you get wisdom as only God can give for the matters before you.
I appreciate it. Amen.
All right, God bless you. Glory. We'll talk to you again in a week.
You too. Okay.
You bet.
All right, over to Gerard. Would he take a siesta over there or what? Gerard?
I'm sorry, I'm talking to myself. I said, first of all...
I thought you went on a sabbatical or something. I don't know.
Look, I already practiced it once. So I said the queue is open and people in the general queue, people can go ahead into the queue. And because I have nobody there right now, so this is going to be a dull conversation. If you just want me to talk, I can do
star
that.
Star 6 to get into the queue. Anybody
star
wants
six,
to get
into
the
queue. There we go. Okay, we have Tennessee Cheryl coming up. I'm going to unmute you. You've been unmuted. Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
No, you're pretty low. Go ahead.
Okay, I was wondering, who do the petitioners contact when the court has said you either have to file an informal papers, pay the filing fee, or the case is dismissed when a habeas corpus is filed by the common law grand jury?
Nobody pays a filing fee for that, and if anybody approaches you with that, you should notify us immediately, and we'll deal with them directly.
Who do I notify?
You'll get a hold of Linda, who has been the main contact. Once you're fully into the intake, and we're going through your case, you should be contacted by Linda. And Linda is in constant contact with me for any concerns. And, she pretty much understands most of what's going on. And from time to time, she has a question. I give her the answers, and then we go forward. Matter of fact, we did discuss this issue. Nobody pays a fee. If they want money, then they're trying to extort money from us, and that's where we're going to go with the clerk. We're going to let them know that they're in contempt of court trying to extort money from the people to get justice out of their courts. They own those courts, not them. And we'll give them the opportunity to amend, and then we'll go after the clerks if they don't do the right thing.
And the last thing, the chief judge was not assigned the case.
Yeah, okay. It doesn't matter. We will assign who we want to assign, but if they want to give us another person, another chief judge, I'm good with that. But we'll hold them both accountable then. Then we'll have two to go after instead of one.
Oh, it's not a chief judge. The chief judge just take the case.
Yeah, I think it was a chief magistrate, wasn't it?
It was not. No, sir.
Oh, well, we'll go after both of them anyway.
Okay. All right, I yield. Thank
you. You know, just make sure you communicate everything. And anything you get, anything you hear, anything you see, communicate concerning this case as we go forward. We need to know. We don't want to find out, you know, a week later or days later. We need to know right away so we can deal with it, if necessary, right away, or at least get it into our plan of responding back to these people. So Linda should know immediately if anything comes up of this type.
All right, thank you, and I yield.
Okay. All right.
You know, in the federal courts, they always try to do that, but they seem to crumble a lot quicker than the state courts do with that payment.
They have always crumbled with me.
They never gave us that kind of trouble in the federal courts.
Well, you have to push it through and tell them no. That's not the way it works.
Right. You give them the notice, you know, the file on demand notice. And usually that clerk is educated enough, unlike some of the state ones, to go ahead and push it through. You know, they probably tell them don't push it. They probably already know. But anyway, it's unusual to see the federal court give you a lot of trouble. So I just thought that was interesting. Anyway, I'm going to unmute the next caller. I have no name. It ends in 9345. You've been unmuted.
Hey, this is Joe in Massachusetts. Thank you for taking the call.
Yes, Joe. What's up tonight?
I've been hoping to find some information to share with us on the Monday night call, which I was just able to find a few minutes ago. And it regards the court watching program that we've tried to do and spruce up in the past. I don't know if anyone else listening might want to look up a name or check this out online as I tell this story, because this guy is one of my real heroes. He was a huge inspiration for me years ago, and I just want to tell people on the call about him. His name was Tony Torosian, T-O-R-O-S-I-A-N, and he was an Armenian guy from just outside of Boston, and I think he really embodied what we're trying to do with our court watchers, Gerard. That's why I wanted to share the story a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Tony was written up not only in the Boston Globe when he passed away at age 75, but his story was also put in the Wall Street Journal for being one of Boston's most active court watchers. And in one of those articles, it was written that Tony Torosian wasn't a lawyer or a judge. He wasn't a professor or a politician, agitator or regulator. He was just a good citizen who loved a good trial. And in the article, Gerard went on to tell about this guy and lawyers who commented on him and how he was just a feature in these courts. Even the chief justice of the Boston Federal Court, Mark Wolf, had a moment of silence for this gentleman who was just a regular citizen, just like all of us on this call, all of us in NLA. But he watched these people, and I think what I wanted to share the story for, to be more quick, is that I know we're trying to make an organized program for our court watchers with name tags and the way we dress, a dress code, and our yellow pads and our cameras, but I think what Tony's story teaches us is that we can all be court watchers, whether we're a county organizer now or a state coordinator. I think the people who are best poised to join our group or join NLA or be benefited by the people that we're trying to help are people who are being affected in the courts every day and having their rights taken away. And we can all be Tony Torosians. We can all be in the court, even without an NLA name tag, even without training at this point, but sort of just like little spies for other people, who myself being one of those one day who mistakenly believed I had civil rights and that the court was the place that would respect them. And it took a few times with a boot in my throat to realize that the court was the last place I had civil rights in America anymore.
Yeah, right. That's true. It's almost a civic duty to go in there. You know what I mean? It's supposed to be open to the public. And that's why, because, look, you know, evil only operates real well in darkness. They don't operate, you know, when you turn the lights on, what happens with cockroaches? They run. They don't like the light. And that's how it is with corruption. They don't like the light. So if people regularly went to their courts and sat and watched, that alone, just that action alone of, like you said, a regular person coming in and sitting down, and, you know, if you got a legal pad and a pen, that's another thing that they don't know if you're from one of the, you know, government agencies checking up on them, or you're just, you know, John Q. Public wanting a court watch. But it's very powerful, and you should do it anyway. And look, at law students are told to go do it. They don't teach you procedure. That's how you learn procedure. You go to court and you listen and you get to know the terminology and stuff. They don't teach a lot of that stuff of procedure and how it's done in law school. They always end up, you know, when you're a law student, you end up having to go work under somebody else to learn the procedure. So you'll learn the procedure just sitting there by osmosis. And that's important. And it's important that they know that there's people there that are not connected to any case that are just watching things. That's a very, very good point that you make. You don't have to have a tag on. You just go in, and it's an open proceeding. And if they got regular people coming in doing that, they're going to be a lot more careful about, I mean, there's some horrible abuses in the court, like you said, boots to the throat and things like that. And look, if you had 5 or 6 people or 3 or 4 people in there court watching, they would think twice about doing that. Because those guys, look, you're a witness then. You know, if I was in court and they put a boot on my throat and there was 3, and I knew there was 3 or 4 people that were there that weren't connected to anything else but to watch the court, you know what? I'd go up and get affidavits from them people. And how much of a help would that be for us in court if there's people there that could give us affidavits because, you know, they cleanse the records, we've learned that. So your point is well taken.
Thanks, Gerard. I could talk about Tony Terosian all night long and how much of a hero he was to me, but I know there's always people who want to get into the queue, so I'll try to keep it short. But someone should write a movie about this guy.
Yeah, good point. You don't need a badge. You just need to go. Okay, we're going to move on. Thank you very much. It looks like James, 9126, you're on.
Oh, this is Ginger again. And after hearing the conversation, would you have someone from the welcoming committee email me? And also just a comment on our little French guy was so Bastiat. Let us now try liberty. Yippee. Okay,
yeah.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
Okay, next question is, I thought it was Ginger. What happened?
It's James.
Yeah, go ahead.
9126, yeah. Hi, Gerard and John, Jim Cook, formerly with Crusade Radio. Hey, I'm up and I'm thinking of joining your organization. But basically, I'm going to give you a little background on what's going on here. And I got a question that I think John mentioned before. First of all, the town has gone through and they've started violating through ordinances people's property rights up here. And they set up a nice little communist community. And I'm thinking of going shaking the tree and going to one of their little town meetings and giving them, say, 2 weeks' time to get rid of all the unconstitutional ordinances on the people's property up here. So I'm going to be looking for procedures on how to do that. Any suggestions?
Well, you know, going into like a local town board and stuff, a lot of evil comes there with the ordinances that they put in the Agenda 21, and that's opening the door for them to take people's properties. You know, we have lots of people that come to us after the fact that they've gone in and they're trying to take their stuff, and at that point, then you got to do some serious legal work, the habeas corpus. That's what we're doing. you know, that type of thing in order to save their properties. You know, but being involved before the fact at the town board level and at the county level, look, at they in my county here, they just had an article in the newspaper on how much money they were able to generate by selling the properties that they seized at tax sale in REM, and they doubled their money from what the taxes that were owned. And you see, they play this little game now. This is very illegal in this. This is New York. Not every state does this, but they're learning from each other. You know, it used to be with a tax sale, if they bring the place up to auction, and let's say you owed, I don't know, $10,000 on the taxes, and you were losing it for that, and the bidding went up, and it got went up to $80,000. Well, guess what? The difference between the taxes were due and the auction that they had went to the landowner. Obviously, the person was distressed to begin with, and they weren't able to sell a property. Maybe they were elderly. Maybe they were sick in the hospital. Who knows? But that $70,000 was supposed to go to the landowner. In my state here, what happens is when you start getting delinquent on the taxes, they make a move on you without due process, mind you, and they take over the deed so that by the time it goes to the sheriff's sale, it's actually the county's property, and they keep the money. So now you got your town and your counties in the real estate business. They're stealing the property, and they're selling it at auction. And everybody's having a good time because the guy that picks it up is picking it up under market value, and the county's tripling, quadrupling the tax money that was owed on it to begin with, and they're bragging that they made $1 million, which I think is unconscionable. So, you know, the thing is to become active. I don't know what to tell you. As far as going into the courts, that's an involved thing. You're going to have to learn how to fill out forms and things like that, and I don't even know at that level that you'll be able to stop it, you know. It's better to try to get them to stop the Agenda 21 and all the communist stuff that they do to take these properties over, to call them out on the carpet, your town board members, before they put these ordinances in and they adopt these things, which, by the way, come from the UN, which is a foreign corporation, which means they're in treason. And you need to point that out to them.
Right, and that's what they're doing here, because some of the neighbors, and they said they were familiar with Agenda 21, so they knew what was going on. But I'm thinking the best defense is a good offense. In other words, go into the town meeting and tell them you're going to give them 2 weeks to get rid of these ordinances on the property, or you're filing in federal court for violations of 18 U.S.C. 241 and 18 U.S.C. 242, and remind them that it's a $10,000 fine and a 10-year prison sentence for both of those, and then give them the 2 weeks if they don't do it, file.
Well,
if you do something like that, you're not only going to want to go there to tell them, you're going to want to follow up with a notice and demand, give them 30 days, which is the normal, and make sure you follow the processes that Bill Thornton had laid out. I think it's 7 or 8 points that you want to lay out and make sure, you know, you cover. So that's the best way to do it, and then you'd be ready to pull them into a federal court, because it would be a federal issue, because they're violating the due process rights of the people.
Correct. Now, John, I'm going to give you my email address. If you could send me that information, I would appreciate it.
Well, that's difficult, because I'm really busy and a lot of people want me to do things of that nature, and I just can't do that. But what I can tell you is you can go to 1215.org. So it's real easy. It's the Magna Carta, 1215.org. And just put into the search bar, they got a search bar there, notice and demand. And you will find a couple of papers on that. You'll find the process. You know, you'll find a paper that talks about all the points that needs to be done. You'll find an example one done. I don't know if Bill Thornton done it or someone else. And then you'll find a default and the process of the default. Now, in the default, the key thing you want to do is keep it in due process. You don't want to turn it commercial and start going out after people. You just want to take the default. And what I added into that part of the whole thing on the paperwork that I do was that I was going to take it into the Supreme Court. for the conclusion of the matter. In other words, not just filing any kind of papers on these people. You want to get in and do a show cause. But if you get through that process, you do want to add the fact that you're going to take it into the federal court to solve the problem at the end. And then you do what's called a show cause in the federal court, and then they have to answer. They will default on that too. They'll try to move the court towards, move the court to throw the case out. You object, and if the judge does it, then you're going to have to do a writ of error on the judge and overturn his decision, and then go through and file the default on the other side, which is a double default. And then once you do that, then you want to just go in and file it with the clerk that, hey, time for the default. You file an affidavit of default with the papers, and the clerk has to give you the default of what was in the wherefore clause. The key is the wherefore clause. You must have a good wherefore clause on exactly what it is you're looking for.
Okay. Now, the 1214.org and... 1215.
And what was the... 1215.org. And you want to put in the search bar notice and demand.
And
a couple of things will come up. You'll need all the information that will come up on that. So you could put notice and demand or search also on our site. You might find some stuff. I think we do have something up there.
You know, if everybody would get together in their towns and file paperwork like this, they would crumble. This could be a nationwide movement. You know, get your fingers out of our properties. You know, they got the.
You know, maybe we should do some kind of teaching on this and how people can go in and what the process is into their town boards and go after those people who are making these stupid codes.
Look, they're so arrogant, they think that they have the right to do this.
Yeah.
And, you know, they got this new thing, this international property code that they go by. It's impossible to for your property to meet up with all the statutes of the International Property Code, because they'll take a ruler out and stick it in your grass, and you'll find out it's an inch too high, and they'll write you up, you know? And it's in there. It's actually in there. It's disgusting.
I don't doubt that. I don't doubt that. The Agenda 21 is the communist effort to remove property rights from the people.
Right.
And they
hide it because they call it sustainable development. They give it nice, warm, fuzzy names. And even the town boards might not realize that it's all part of Agenda 21. But it's all the same baloney. It's all run through the UN.
That's absolutely true.
This is good information. People should be having their pencils out. Write this down. If they feel like they can write paperwork, start doing it in your towns. Get a group of people. Look, let's take back America one town at a time. If you could get rid of the illegal taxes and the illegal codes in your town, oh, my goodness. Do you imagine what a boost that would be for a town if you had the land tax declared illegal in your town? Boy, property would sell really quickly, and it would sell for it would be worth so much more money, a piece of property that they can't tax because you got real title to it. Imagine that. Anyway, I don't want to take up too much time. We have a few people in here, but that was a good, you know, thread there on this.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Thank you very much.
God bless you guys, and keep on doing what you're doing.
Yeah, thank you. JP is up next. JP, I know you said you had a quick question. Go ahead, you're open.
Yeah, I it's more of a general question because I'm trying to understand what is the progress on the habeas corpus here. And I'm logged on the page about the petitioner case. And I see resistance, defaulted, processing, whatever. Do we have any win at this point?
Do we have any wins? Well,
yes.
We
do. We have, first of all, we had Stephen Dean. Now, they still, even though they let him out and they didn't put him in jail, they did put him on probation, and we just sent paperwork out for the final default for him. And I'm not sure whether we went to the contempt yet on him, but if we haven't, we'll be doing that next week. We're kind of behind the eight ball on it because we just had so many things to do, but we're catching up on all these older cases. But he was a success. The one before him was a gentleman down in New York City, which I had done directly as a personal individual for him, not through because we were not doing habeas corpuses at that time. And so I did it for him. And that was successful. He was released from jail. So we do have two that have been successful. But we have numerous ones that were in the process. We're just starting to really put the pressure on these people, and we're expecting some more successes. And there'll be some real difficult ones, like the one that I was talking with Fred Johnson, Dr. Fred Johnson, just a little while ago, earlier on in this program, on his case. And they've been in jail for 10 years, his son, 10 or 11 years, his son and his business partner. And we're working on getting them released. We do know, we've heard some talk of what some of the things they said and what they're doing, and we do know that they're nervous. We also have had communications with another case with the lawyers. I think it was the prosecutor or someone. I don't remember, Gerard, if you might remember who it was. But they, maybe it was just the lawyer on the other side. But we had this, no, it was the prosecutor. We had this on recording.
Explain to me, when you say defaulted, what is that you sent, default notice?
Well, habeas corpus works this way. You file the questions are asked on why am I being held? I mean, ultimately, that's what the petitioner is asking. He lays out his case, puts in an affidavit, and makes the point of the case of that why they're holding him. He wants an answer. They can't answer. And when we get the petition, we approve the petition as a tribunal and in the court. And so once we make the approval, now they have 3 days. They'll receive it usually on a Monday, the way we mail it out. They usually receive it on a Monday. Monday don't count. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. If they don't answer by 5 p.m. Thursday, then it defaults. Once they default, that's it. They got to let them out of jail. That's the law, and that's the habeas corpus, and that's been for hundreds of years.
So defaulted is actually news for us.
Default is what?
Is it good news.
Yes, they always default. We go through the process of default. What we were doing was sending the default papers in, but what we didn't do, which is normally done, was sending in what's called an affidavit of default. And then we realized, well, you know, they should have just been obedient to the fact that there was a seal on the paper saying the default had happened. But again, they want to give us a hard time. So what we did now is we have the next friend or the individual that is in the petition would then do what's called an affidavit of default, and then they'd get it to us, and then we would file it with the default in both courts, the federal court and the local court, with the affidavit of default, and we're finding that that is what's really rocking their boat now. Now they get nervous. Once we did that, then conversations would happen. Like we have this one conversation on record, the recorded, whereas, that's when they say, well, we're studying it now. Well, they actually should have studied when they first got it, but they didn't pay us any heed. But now they're studying it. So they're doing research on our paperwork and what we have said and then the default and everything else. So, yeah, success, I think we've had some success. I think we're about ready to have a lot more success. And hopefully we'll get some of these big ones going and really push them. We'll be doing indictment soon.
Well, John, this is helping a lot understanding this page. And I think that is very encouraging, and I like it so far after your explanation. Thank you very much, and I yield.
Okay, JP, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, JP. Yeah. Okay, next question is New York Phil. You're on the air.
This is Phil from New York.
Hey.
I'm dealing with getting a grand jury into Livingston County. And you were mentioning that I should really get into learning how to write affidavits. My question is, what do I need to do that? Do I need a computer with a Wi-Fi and that be sufficient, or do I need to get Skype?
Well, you definitely need a computer.
I've got
Wi-Fi,
a computer.
Whatever, any way to connect into the Internet, of course, is extremely important. And if you're going to get involved in actually getting involved with paperwork and writing, of course, you want to have MS Word and Excel. But the key thing really is to become educated first. You know, we're not ready to move grand juries what really setting up is the administrations for the grand juries and the trial juries.
Right.
So that's the key here. And we're not ready to do that. It absolutely is not going to happen on the grassroots level from the standpoint of the county. It's not going to happen in the county. It is possible that one may get in here or there, but it is very, very unlikely. But even if one gets in here or there, that's not going to catapult us into the system, because they won't really feel threatened. But the success will happen on the federal level, within the federal district. And so let's call it the grassroots level on the federal district. That's where it's going to happen. Once we get the habeas corpus is moving through, once we get an indictment going and happening, at least one indictment on a judge or some prosecutor or something, or even a clerk, once that gets going, that's the break in the chink in their armor, so to speak. And that's when we're going to really start to move in on a landslide at that point. We had news of a judge, and I'm not sure. We won't talk about that. But the bottom line is that once we get in from the federal level, we get in every level. Because now we will then be able to work the courts to bring justice down on the state level and start putting these judges in jail to try to block us from coming in. And then game over for them.
Mm-hmm. So will I need Skype or no?
If you're going to get involved and communicate, absolutely, because you want to communicate with people, you want to communicate with the other potential administrators, if that's what you're doing, you want to get involved with committees. And our way of communications right now is Skype for the purpose of, you know, information back and forth. You want to take, of course, the civics course we have.
I'm in the process of doing that.
And then, of course, get involved with the IRC IRC committee, which is you get in touch with them and get connected with them and come to the classes on Tuesday. We have a class every Tuesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard mm-hmm. Time. We're working on probably a PowerPoint presentation course on the Constitution. Directly, you know, word for word, going through the Constitution. Certain areas we'll kind of skip, but we're going to go through the Constitution. And we're also going to be working on a book, which we have actually started, but we have to get back to it, which is going to be a handbook for administrators. And there's some other things we might be doing in some courses, and those courses will be things set up where people come whenever they want to take the, you know, do the time in the course, an hour here, an hour there, just like the civics course. People could do it on their spare time. And we'll set everything up we can as fast as we can, but, of course, you know, things do take time.
Yeah. Well, I needed to know because I got to plan my finances accordingly. Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
Okay. Hang on just a minute. I'm a little distracted typing to people here. Next caller is G. Zach. 9974. You're unmuted. Go ahead.
Yes. Hello, everybody. This is Tony. I've been a member for like a couple of months now.
Uh-huh. What state are you in?
I'm in Illinois. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah.
In Lake County. It's a county just north of Chicago.
Okay.
And I basically just like to tell you, this county is got some pretty corrupt long-time public officials here.
Well, it probably got its lesson from Chicago, no?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got a case I wanted to tell you about, because it's always good to hear frivolous things that happen. One of them is I was stopped like 5 days ago because I don't use a license no more. I'm suspended. I've been suspended for a couple of years, which is one of the cases I'm filing a habeas corpus on. I actually have 3 cases. And anyways, I wanted to talk to you about this forfeiture proceeding that I got mailed to me. I got a forfeiture procedure.
You mean a forfeiture procedure for you to use against them? I mean, we really don't want to talk about cases on here, but if you want to talk about a strategy or something, is that what you is that what you mean?
I wanted to share with you that about what they sent me after they towed my car because I was driving. I have no plates, not registered, no insurance. But I just wanted to share with you what they have, they're trying to do. They mailed me a pending hearing, a summary proceeding for a forfeiture proceeding, and this has no case number written on it. It has no appeal or judge signature on it, and they're scheduling it for 7 days ahead of time. From 3 days ago, they sent it to me. And
well, look, they're going to steamroll you as much as they want. They can. They feel comfortable doing this. You know, it's you got a problem at that low end level because they are lawless, and the fact of the matter is they believe they own your car. You don't have the certificate of origin. You probably got a registration or a title, which really, in their mind, means they own it and they can tell you what to do with it. I mean, I know it's ludicrous, but that's the way they view it. And really, you should start sending your repair bills to them if they own the car. But you're not going to win there. I mean, look, you got to decide: do you want to fight or do you want to win? That's what Bill Thornton used to say. So if you continue to go into their court and play with their people and all that stuff, they're going to continue steamrolling you. That's why we end up in the federal court with a claim of a violation of your unalienable rights, and that's when they understand when there's a claim in the court. And ultimately, you know, you can actually sue them personally, individually, and that really gets their attention. And sometimes that's what this actually gets down to after they've been violating everybody. You know, you can actually do a notice of tort and let them know that they're going to be held for damages. And you could even include that as part of your habeas corpus. So I don't really want to discuss the case. We got lots of people driving around with no plates getting picked up every day. And it's an uphill battle. And I mean, look, at any cop that sees you is going to pull you over. You know, I think Michael Bagnarek drives around with no plates in his county, and they leave him alone because they know who he is, and he's been in the courts, and he's beat them up so much. So he does it, and they leave him alone because it's too much trouble for them. As a matter of fact, somebody told us that there's some word out in different states that the police officers have been told, if you know that the person is part of NLA or they got any kind of printed material that looks like they're with NLA, don't give them any tickets that's going to bring them in court. They don't want us in court. So the word's getting out. You know what I mean? And that's what you got to do. You got to just make it so that you're just such a pain in the neck, they don't want to bother with you. And a lot of times they'll just let you go. That's a we consider that a victory. You know what I mean? But you can sue them. You can take it as much as you want to go. You know what I mean? But you can't play in their courts because you'll end up going to jail. They'll throw you in jail. They'll have you in contempt of court. They'll get you for aggravated unlicensed. Before you know it, you'll have three or four felonies. They'll stick you in there, and they'll throw the key away. And then, you know, even if you file a habeas corpus, if you're a real pain in the neck, they'll make sure they kick your ass before they let you go and to make sure they hurt you really good. So you just, listen, don't play around in their courts. That's the best advice I can give you.
Yeah, that part, I'm aware of that, and I have no objection or controversy with that. I was just looking about what I'm going to just do about it. I want to file a habeas corpus, and I'm in their civics course. I'm trying to get to the intake form. I'm not the best on the computer, but it hasn't really worked for me with filing the intake form. Is there any other way I can do that, like if you mailed me a forms and I mailed it to you guys?
Well, what do you mean? When you go and click on the frowny face and it gives you to what kind of problem you have and you pick it, there should be a form.
Well, it gives them a form, and I believe Microsoft Word, and all he has to do is type the answers in there. You can only type in areas that, you know, that we allow him to type in because it's a closed document. and sometimes it may not work on some people's computer. They might be able to get right in and do all changes. But in any event, they basically need to answer the questions, you know, and they're very basic questions: the name of the court, the judge, the name of the prosecutor, the addresses, the attorney general, the sheriff and his address, and their fax numbers, you know, and we need a, of course, a sworn affidavit, and basically that paperwork lays everything out, what information we need and what paperwork we need. We usually look to get the docket, if we can get a docket, and a habeas corpus, and an affidavit, of course, that the person has to do. So there are three things that are necessary. The third one, of course, is the filling out the intake form. So fill out the best you can, save it, and then email it to the address intake@nationallibertyalliance.org, and also email your affidavit and your docket, if you can get the docket.
Okay, yeah, I've got the directions. Remember,
well,
you told me a few days ago, and I believe I got to mail like 4 or 5 copies of the affidavits and habeas corpus. Is that right?
No. You just have to... No, we take care of everything on this end. All you have to do is go through the process. Now, we do ask for people to give us, I don't remember, whether it was $60 or so. I think it's $60 to cover, to offset the cost, because, you know, we have to send a lot of mail out. And we're starting to realize, as we're getting deeper and deeper into this, it's costing us more than $60 per case. So I was talking with Linda, who's the secretary, and we may have to escalate that up, and I'm not sure where we're going to bring it to. But, you know, when we do the, for instance, the petition for the habeas corpus and get that out, we may have to send it to 8 or 10 people, maybe 15 people, but generally at least 7 or 8 people, and, well, at least 8 people. And then, of course, we have to make a copy for our file. And when we send these out, we have to do the courts, and the chief judge has to be done certified. And then with the courts, we have to put in a self-addressed stamped envelope inside there. So, again, all of this is additional cost: the certification, the self-addressed stamped envelopes, and then mailing it out to all 8 people, their large envelopes. So, of course, a few bucks a piece and so on. And that's just the first wave. And once that goes through the process, then we have to do the default paper. We do default paper the same way. We have to do the certifying on 3 of the papers. And then once that goes through, then we have to, in all likelihood, in most cases, at least now, we're getting to that point where we find them in contempt of court, and we are telling them that we're giving them the opportunity to amend. And again, we want to then do a couple of them certified. Again, the courts we do certified, the chief judge we certify, because those are the people who we're going to hang, so to speak, as the law is being broken. And then if the clerk gives us a problem and doesn't send us the paperwork back, now again, there's more paperwork's got to go out, and again, that's got to be certified, and we'll do a contempt of court on them. Eventually, we may move into, eventually the next step is contempt of court, and then the next step after that we start to consider is to indict them, which is probably where we're going to be heading with some of these cases. And so each one of these steps is paperwork, and each one, you know, each paper that we're sending out could be 20, 30 pages with an envelope, the stamps, the return stamps, the certifying, and so on. There's a lot of paper, of course, involved here. There's a lot of toner. I go through toner like crazy, yeah. So 60 bucks isn't enough, so I think I'm going to talk with a few people and see where we're going, where we have to go with this in order to cover the cost, because we now are digging into monies that people are donating for National Liberty Alliance just to get some of these cases out. But these cases are part of what we're doing, and has to be done not only for the help of people, but also to give credibility and power and clout and leverage to the grand juries, the common law grand juries that we're establishing. So
sure,
we'll take it from it. We'll work that out, though. But anyway.
Yeah, definitely always be planning to give more than $60 for sure. You more than answered my question. I appreciate it.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah, I really don't have too much other questions. I just to go back.
And don't forget, if you have any problems with your paperwork, you can, you know, when you send whatever you do have in by email to intake@nationallibertyalliance.org, make sure you include your phone number and ask them, whatever questions you want to ask. They may answer by email, or they may give you a call on the phone. But eventually they will call you on the phone. Once the intake is complete or close to complete, then they may have questions on our side to ask you, and then they'll usually do that on the phone and then go back and forth by phone until you're complete with everything, and then you moved into the next process. And then we record it, and you can see the movement of the cases now online right here on our website.
So you need to do that as quick as possible, since they only give you 7 days. So you want to get it moving, you know?
Yeah. I'm aware of that. I'm just thinking that I'm probably going to go, because it has no case number written on here, so I see that this officer personally signed it. He's bypassing the courts unless the court is accepted a filing, but they left no case number and no deal. No.
Well, court. You call up the court, call up the clerk, and ask them, what's the case number to this case, and is there a docket? I'd like to get a copy of the docket.
You're going to need it anyway. You're going to need it for your habeas corpus.
Yeah, but when they're going through these traffic things, they don't even know what a docket is sometimes.
Yeah.
I mean, they're ridiculous. They don't have a docket.
Yeah, definitely, because he gave me 7 tickets, and he wrote me my summaries in the Morty Motors, and there's no bond. He didn't write up really no bond information or no bond paper. So that's another suspicious thing. What do you think of that?
Yeah, they never give you that.
I mean,
judges run and hide underneath their little desks there when you ask them for
their bonds.
They
didn't even ask me for a bond. This was a puzzling thing. That's because they know me. I've been really going at this for a couple of years. I get stopped on my bicycle. I've got the sheriff arrested me riding my bicycle. That's another one of my cases. And, they're just really frivolous out here, and I just wanted to share that with you guys.
Okay.
And that's all I got to say. And thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for that. Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, yeah. Another horror story from the annals of America here, huh? Next caller, it's Sharon from Connecticut. You're unmuted.
Gerard and John, I'm speaking about the police writing tickets. They're actually writing summary judgment at that time. That's what I was told by, I don't know if it was a prosecutor or somebody.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. That answers a lot of questions now, because I think you're absolutely right. That makes sense. That's what they're doing. Summary judgments and the tickets, because no one's ever found innocent. No, everyone's guilty.
Ever, right. And they said that they are given the authority to write a summary judgment.
That's interesting. I'd love to get that in writing from them, I'll tell you.
So, how can they do that? They're not a judge, but...
Even a judge can't do a summary judgment. It's unconstitutional, and it's it's not permitted in our courts. But they do it every day, all day long.
That goes hand in hand with the fact that I know a guy that was training to be a state police, and one of the things they taught him is that when you walk up to the car on a traffic stop, that you're contracting with the person. Can you imagine that? It's all starting to fall into... I mean, they're actually teaching them that. You see, they want them to go through a certain line of questioning that actually causes you, in their mind, with their word magic, to give up your rights, to allow them to do what they're doing to you.
Yeah, and they're being so nice when they do it. Trying to chalk you into that old contract.
But at the end of the day, it's all fraud. And you could do a habeas corpus and be taken right out of that jurisdiction and just thrown right out of their court.
Exactly. And it's such a wonderful thing, that habeas corpus. And another thing I don't know if JP is still online here, but when he was talking about the... I lost my train of thought, but the thing about default.
Default, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that what it means is there is no fault found. When Jesus was standing in front of Pilate and he said, "I find no fault."
Right.
That's what a default is. There is no fault. They can't speak any fault, but they can't speak it anyway. But there is no fault.
Well, look,
and have them in custody.
Well, look, in the law, silence means you agree, and that's your default.
Yeah,
right?
Okay.
I mean, they're saying when they default, they're not answering what your show cause.
No, we're calling them out. We're calling them out. They are in.
So they're defaulting, which means that they're agreeing with everything you said. And that's why when these judges move ahead after they default, they're just digging themselves a big hole.
Way deep.
In other words, what do they think? That we're defaulting them in a federal court. You know, they don't have that. I mean, do they think they have a protection in the federal court?
Yeah.
You know,
unalienable rights.
Look, if they want to overcome the default, they have to show that there was a good reason why they defaulted, and they have to show that they would have probably won, which they can't do either. So I don't know why these judges think they can keep moving after they've been defaulted in a federal court. I mean, look, they need to take procedure 101. A paper comes in, you don't answer it, you lose. That's it. End of story. That's what they do to us. You know?
Well, I think they had that little tune going on in their head. You know, he had high hopes. He had high hopes. Yeah. Yeah, that's what they have, high hopes that they're going to just keep on steamrolling and blow you over till you don't come back.
Well, that's why we have to, more and more people need to push back until they get tired or scared and they realize that we're all waking up now. That we've pulled that plug out of the back of our heads.
Amen.
Okay. Thank you very much, Sharon.
Yep. Thanks.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Next caller, which is a wireless caller, no name.
Okay. Well, it's Ken.
Yes, Ken.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I was given the information to come and give them your calls, and I wanted to find out some information. I have been living in this area over here where I live at in Georgia, here in Atlanta, now for about four years now, all together. And the other day, I was just ran down the street. And I must say this, what's going on here is involving a school bus. And my whole family worked for the school system, and a lot of them even drove buses and still do drive buses. So I understand the bus system and the children and what's going on, a lot of these people running the light, and even though they have a sign out, they just go around it or just go past it because they don't understand or the intention is to run the sign, I'm a minister, here in the Atlanta area, and I have, I try to, operate myself with proper ethics and integrity as well. So one thing I do is try to make certain that I drive carefully so I don't end up getting no tickets because I drive under a commercial driver's license. And the day that I was coming up, I left home to go to the store because I'm disabled right now. And so I was coming back. I went to the store, come back home, and the bus was parked on it wasn't parked, but it was letting students out on the opposite side of the road. Well, there is a median in the room. Well, according to Georgia law, it says that if there's a median in the room, those on the opposite side do not have to stop. They can continue to go. But those that's on the same side where the bus is stopped and where the children is getting off, if that sign is out, then you have to stop. So I kind of slowed down, tried to figure out, should I stop? Because, I ain't want no mess. And it was one of the days I wasn't in no hurry anyway, so it was just like, I could have stopped. But this
man with all the formula in this SUV was like, what you doing trying to stop for? You know, he's like, move on out of my way, move. You know, so just like, okay, I'm going on ahead. So I went on ahead with about six of them all behind me. And they all, you know, came through. But then the police came up all of a sudden behind me, and he stopped me. So I'm like, okay, why is he stopping me? As when he told me, I ran the school bus stop sign, and that, you know, that you can't just go run the school. I said, well, I was on the opposite side of the road from the bus, and there's a median in the road, and I understand that based upon by there being a median in the road that I do not have to stop, that we have the right to continue to keep going. And he said, no, that's done changed. He said, no, no matter where the bus is, whether there's a median in the road or they can have a wall there, if a bus is stopped, you got to stop too. So I said, okay. I said, well, I don't remember seeing that. I said, that's kind of new. I ain't never heard that. But he said, well, it's true. So, you know, I'm not going to sit up here and try to make an argument with you. I'll go back and forth on words with you. Just discuss that with the judge. I said, oh, okay. And I just took the ticket. But I'm like, you know, this made no sense because after the code that he said I violated, I came home and I looked it up because I was a paralegal. I looked up the code and I looked it up to see whether or not there's been any changes in the code since it was written. And it hadn't changed. No rewritten anything, or updates on it or nothing. So I'm like, okay, well, what is this man talking about? How did I violate a code that he put down here? And I told him that I was within the law of doing what I rightfully should be able to do.
You could go crazy with a case like this because they believe whatever the officer says. And look, you can fight this thing or you can pay it. I don't know. I mean, you said you got a commercial driver's license, so that's like a moving violation. You don't want it on your license. And so the easiest thing to do is try to make it go away before court comes. I don't know when your court date is, but
it's in January.
It's when?
January.
Yeah. So if you feel confident that code has not been changed and you can document that it has not, I don't know. I would go to that police officer's superior. And I would say, I got a commercial driver's license. I don't need this thing coming up. He's making a mistake. Of course, they got to document where you are, where the bus was. And the bus driver might be your biggest witness. I mean, we don't like to get in their courts and fight with their statutory stuff, but nevertheless, you know, you do have a commercial driver's license, and the whole school bus thing can be considered a safety thing. So, look, if you feel you're right, I would see them ahead of time and see if they won't squash that ticket for you ahead of time. You know what I mean? That's what I would do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then you avoid a lot of trouble. You're playing a little bit of politics, but it's not a bad thing. You know what I mean? You know, maybe talk to the bus driver. You're allowed to do an investigation, you know, and see if the bus driver will sign a statement that there was a medium in the road. If it comes down to where you actually want to go to a trial, you call the bus driver in, you know, but just make sure you know your facts. And if you get into trouble, then you can do the more advanced stuff that we do here, and you can habeas corpus out of it, you know.
Also, go back to the site and take pictures.
Right, right.
But that's what I was assuming to do, just take pictures of the site.
See if he documented it very well on the ticket, but I would, because the officer, he can't lie, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Not to say that he wouldn't, but you know what I mean. And the thing is you got a school bus that was probably full of kids, it sounds to me like you got some extenuating circumstances in your favor, and I would try to play them and just be very nice. Don't be hot-headed or anything. Just be very nice about it and say, look, it's a mistake. You know, make it like it's a mistake and tell him, you know, you're not gonna lay down, but you also, you know, you don't wanna have this go any further than it needs to go because, you know, you're gonna pursue. You are not gonna lay down. You're gonna pursue it, and you're gonna, you know, eventually maybe seek down. You know. So
okay,
anyway,
okay.
It sounds
so,
like it's pretty cut. I wouldn't get too crazy about it just now, but, you know, look, you got till January. That should give you plenty of time to go and lay some groundwork for what you need to do, you know?
Okay.
All right. Anyway,
so say,
good luck to
you. I can go talk to you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Anyway, we're going to the next caller, who is James Cook. You've been unmuted. Are you there?
Okay. Yes, I was muted on my end. Basically, I have another question. You've heard of Title 42 violations, which deals with the IRS?
Yes. Yeah, U.S. Code, yeah.
Yeah, now, let's just say I'm collecting Social Security, and they're taking $200 out of my Social Security a month. Stop them.
You're kind of breaking up. I'm getting like every third word there. I think you got a bad connection. I heard they're taking 200 something out of my check.
Yeah, $255.
Okay.
So how do I proceed to stop them?
Who's taking $250 out of your check every month?
Yeah, the IRS is doing it. Did they send you a notice of lien?
No, but they said that they could and they did.
They could and they did what?
Sent me put a lien on my Social Security.
Well, they can't put a lien on your Social Security without going through the courts, and they do have a process. Yeah, but people lose their houses because sometimes the way things are set up, they'll go out and they'll do an auction on it, and then they'll give them a dispossess notice, and of course they auction off the house first. And some people leave before the house is totally auctioned off. Some people wait for the dispossess and they leave. But none of that is illegal. If you stay in the house, they can't throw you out anyway, and they can't get the sheriff unless the sheriff has due process, unless it's a sheriff that's going to break the law. And some of these sheriffs are dumb, so they do break the law not even knowing it. But we've seen a case, for instance, down in Maryland where the guy sat in his house for 2 years and refused to leave. But what they did do is they set him up in other ways, and then he ended up in jail. He's in jail for 2 years, which we've been trying to get him out, but we don't have a next friend for him down there. But in any event, they do whatever they want to do. In your case, you need to challenge it, and you would need to challenge it in a federal court, but you also need the experience on how to go into a federal court, how to write the papers, open a court of record, and then write the right things. I mean, they don't have an actual lien on you. In order to have a lien filed in the county, they have to file the lien first in the federal courthouse. And that federal courthouse is the two papers, is a form 4690 and a form 56. One of them is a proof a proof of claim, and the other one is getting fiduciary authority over your estate, in other words, over you. And those are two forms that require in the federal court. They have to be certified and sworn to. And so they're done under as an affidavit. They never do that, and they never record it, and that's one way to beat those systems. But to beat them, you got to go into the court, the federal court, say, hey, these two papers haven't been filed, and they took a lien on me. They're illegally taking my money. But you have to be, of course, on the from the plaintiff side, and then you have to be able to write the papers. So that's a big you can learn to write papers by studying stuff on our website and studying with Bill Thornton, but it takes time.
Okay, now here's what I found out. I don't know if you know who Cooper is. He was a writer. He wrote Behold a Pale Horse.
Yeah, I'm familiar with him, yes.
Okay, well, they murdered him in Maricopa County, Arizona. But basically, he put out a paper, and so far nobody's been
to disprove it. He says that the IRS is actually a Puerto Rican trust number 62. Nobody right. can find out who owns
yeah,
it.
Yeah, they are incorporated in the Philippines and in Puerto Rico in two different places, one of the IRS cap and the other one IRS small letters. It's a foreign corporation. They're operating illegally, of course. They claim to be a federal. Well, they really don't outright say that they're the federal government, but they give the impression that they are. And if you try to challenge them on it, the judge usually protects them, because I've done that in court already. The judge said I'll have no more of this here. And, you know, I had papers
federal
showing.
Federal Express, huh?
Huh?
I said it's kind of like Federal Express, no?
Yeah. So,
yeah.
Hey, look at Title 26 in itself says that it's not law. And you can use that in court, too. But you're not going to win in their kangaroo courts, because the judges are all set in. But you have to shake up the judge. You have to open up your own court of record, and you got to stick to your guns, and you got to object to everything. You got to let them know that you know what you're doing. And once they see you don't know what you're doing, they're going to take advantage of you. They'll make certain moves, and once they feel comfortable, they turn the steamrollers on and game over. So it is an uphill battle. If the people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. Forget about it. You're not going to get nothing. So we have to become educated.
With that being said, I heard that back in 1933 that they entered the secret agreement, and they started changing the laws back then, and they started to use the courts to pay off the bankruptcy 20 years after World War One, where they were using the money, most of the money from the courts, to pay for the World War One, and basically that was part of the payback, where they just keep the courts as their processes, and they turned around and they said, if you go into court and you ask what is the true nature and cause of the proceedings against me, they would have to reveal that, and sometimes the judge will dismiss right away, because they then have to bring the bankers in who allegedly were paying the money to pay off this debt that can't be repaid.
Yeah, but just bear in mind, these days they don't feel that they have to answer anybody anything, and they're so bold and they feel so protected and so above the law that they'll just tell you, hey, just shut up and let's move on. What do you have to say over there, counselor? And they're just going to ignore you. They're going to steamroll you, and very rarely are you going to be able to put them under any pressure that's going to make them feel that they are in some kind of a risk. But again, you know, you take these into federal court, and if you know how to put the judge into, a concern about you, he starts to worry about you, and if your paperwork is good, he's going to see this court case go away. But, you know, you never know what they're going to do, because they get bolder and bolder and bolder. And that's why, of course, we're doing what we're doing here at National Liberty Alliance. We've had enough of it. It's time to take the courts back so we can take our government back. We want to take all three branches back and bring it back under the Constitution. That's our goal. That's our focus. And we're going to try to do it. I believe we'll eventually be successful. You know.
Now, have you processed any of this paper for these type of cases?
Which kind of cases?
The one I just mentioned where they're
attaching. IRS. We've done IRS cases. We don't do cases anymore, but we were doing cases for people, helping people. And, again, getting thrown out of the court is a win, and that's the key. You just want to be left alone. And you're not going to go stick the stick back into, the hornet's nest once you're out of there. We've done these things. We've been successful, quite successful against the IRS. We've been successful in different kinds of courts. We've also lost. As we got to progress, for lack of a better word, in the court system, learning the system, we were pretty good at it. And again, being kicked out was a win. You know, you don't really get any win on record. They won't let you have a win on record.
So then, does it stop the lien?
Oh, yeah. If you, again, you have to study to know how to do it. But I'll tell you what, by the time you study, figure it out, learn the process, be able to intimidate the judge and walk into the court, the whole system, I believe, will be changed, because I think we will succeed at what we're doing before you could do that. So the thing is you work with National Liberty Alliance to work with the grand juries to get into the court system to bring things back. And then once the court system is brought back into courts of justice, then you can go to the grand jury in your county and look for restitution and help and protection, and they'll give it to you.
Well, here's the $50 million question. Now, they take the money, and they don't deposit it into the U.S. Treasury from the IRS. They deposit it into the Treasury of the Federal Reserve, which means that Rockefeller and the Rothschilds end up getting the money. But
we know all that. The whole thing is a fraud. Judges are there to settle accounts. It's all about money. Anybody who walks into a courtroom without a judge is going to lose, without a lawyer is going to lose. And even if you go in with a lawyer, depending on who's on the other side, you're going to lose. And rarely do people that are coming in, quote unquote, pro se, I call it in personam, in person, so in personam, it's an uphill battle all the time. You can win, but again, a win is getting thrown out.
I think you got it right the first time, Josh, when you said if you walk into a courtroom without a judge, that's the mafia coming out.
<that's-
laughs> You don't want that judge, you better not walk in there. Anyway, that's how bad it is. But ultimately,
yeah, we're gonna be. Look, if you don't know how to do these things, if you don't know common law, you haven't studied under thought, and you haven't really taken the course to learn how to write papers and how the processes go and the motions and all the paperwork necessary, how to put a court case together, and you don't know how to open up a court of record, and all these things take time to learn. You're not going to learn them overnight. It's going to take months and most people a year, maybe even more, to get all these things together, to feel confident to walk into a court. Again, we need to stop the whole thing anyway. Not to teach people how to win in the courts, in their stupid courts. Let's bring the justice back into the courts, and we don't have to worry about winning anywhere except for having just cases being done and getting restitution for the cases and all the horrors that they've done to us. That's what we need to do. And then we, at the same time, look at, people need to realize they need to educate themselves. They need to meet the king of the court, know the king of the court, have a relationship with the king of the court, and represent that king of the court when they go into the court. And they also need to understand how things work and learn. And we have to get this into our schools. We have to get it into the elementary schools and even in the higher education. But anyone in elementary school could learn these things once you bring things back under the proper jurisdiction, which is common law.
If we got the time.
Well, again, we're out of school and we have to self-educate. And, to fight in their courts, it'll take you a year to learn. To learn common law, you can learn that even less than that, of course, but you're not going to get common law in their courts, but so you have to learn other things to fight them in their courts and sue them in your court. So it's a lot to learn, you can, depending on who you are, and how you are with learning new things. Some people could learn quickly and some people take a little time, take more time, so... All right, anyway, that's all I can tell you on this. Gerard, you still here?
I'm going, yeah, I'm moving to the next caller. I got a good audience here. Okay, thank you, James. Let's see, Was that James the 4-2? Anyway, the next caller is 4279 wireless caller. You're unmuted. Go ahead. Are you there? Wireless caller. Ending in 4279. Going once.
Yeah, area Hello? Code 747.
Yes. Are you there? I heard you. You said hello.
Yeah, okay. I guess so. Is that me?
That's you.
Oh, okay. All right. Guess I wasn't paying attention. I'm sorry. Anyway, yeah, this is Jody again. Actually, I got a few things here going on. my personal situation has deteriorated. I think I made some bad decisions. I ended up requesting a court-appointed attorney before I went and had this court-ordered psych evaluation that I just could not get out of. I was denied my right to have the court-appointed attorney.
Are you still in court?
Yeah, I'm supposed to be going back to court again November 30th.
Okay, you need to do a habeas corpus. You have to get out of that court. Do a petition for a habeas corpus.
I know I've got to get it done right away. I've been working on my paperwork. It was a lot. I've got my first draft, and I'm ready to do what I call a merge of information, my story with
All you need is three things. You need a docket, and usually you go to clerk to ask for the docket. You get the docket, and with the docket will come with any exhibits that are in the court will be in that docket. The second thing you need is an affidavit, which is your story. Less than three pages, one or two preferable. But your story, as if you were telling your neighbor what happened, you just tell the story. You know, on or about a certain day, a certain time, at a certain place, this happened, that happened, the other thing happened, and this was said and that said, whatever the case may be. Okay, and then the final thing, of course, is the intake form. And the intake form is just basic questions on, you know, what attorneys are in the courtroom, you know, names, addresses, fax numbers, the judge, the name of the court, you know, all the basic information, which most of it is in the docket anyway. And once you get those three things together, you work back and forth with intake, and once you get it all together, then it moves forward into your case. But you gotta move quickly on it because we have about 100 cases, roughly speaking, and cases coming in every day. Now people are dragging their feet, you know, taking their time, getting their papers, getting this and getting that. But whoever gets done first, as soon as you get your paperwork, you move to the next level, and you could be pushed in front of 100 people. So that's the key. If you have a date coming up and the end of the month comes quick, you need to do your paperwork and get it in quick.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to condense it. I mean, I've got 9 years worth of harassment, but I'm trying to condense my whole story down and then condense it even more. I've got to get it into three pages. I mean,
we don't need a long, long story. And basically, you want to get to, the important points, okay?
The point, I guess. And the thing is with the technology part is I have a problem. I heard a caller on earlier, and it sounded like he was having the same problem that I have with just not being able to have access to IT. That causes problems. That's one of my biggest problems is just not having access to the internet, a scanner, a fax, a printer.
Okay, I understand that, but you have to understand our position is, we're super busy to begin with, and we can't take this information over the phone. Matter of fact, we tried doing that, and believe me, it's a mess. And then even when we take information, spend a lot of time with people, then they finally drag their feet, and lots of pieces they don't get back to us with, and meanwhile, other people that are moving quickly or could move quickly don't get through. But this is the only way we can do it. But one way or another, even if you get a hold of a family member, of a friend, a neighbor, somebody, who has a computer and maybe a little more savvier than you are, and just ask them to help you through this process to get the paperwork in. It's something that could be done very – I'll tell you what. There is absolutely no reason why anybody could do everything in one day and get all that information. You get the intake done. If you put your mind to it, you get the intake done. You get your docket. You write your affidavit. You check it out with intake. You then go say, okay, we got it. You go down and you get it notarized. You get it in. You're ready. You could literally do it in one day if people really want to get it done. And that puts you right into the queue to go to the next step.
Yeah, most right. Libraries will let you use a computer. Most libraries have a computer bank available if you can do it during, you know, business hours.
Right, and we have a fax number if you have to fax things.
I work during the day. I guess the point, what I'm trying to see is, like, from my perspective, could we possibly get, like, okay, you got all these committees. Could we get a committee of, like, an IT person, one or two people within a county, where people can go to that person and they do nothing but help people who don't have access to these kinds of things, or them being the IT person if people can't do it on their own, to forward that information and help us with that process?
Well, look, we have a lot of committees and a lot of people we're trying to get into the committees to do the work that needs to get done. And even with that, we're shorthanded. We're always shorthanded. So we need more volunteers. We'll never be able to set up an IT person in every state to get things done. We do have IT people, but they wouldn't be able to assist you in the way that you're looking to assist. So the best thing to do and the easiest thing to do, is find a family member, a brother, a sister, children, anybody. Find a friend, someone you work with maybe that does computer, that's on the computer, has access to the internet, and ask them to help you, just do a couple of things to bring these things together to get it to intake. The other thing is you have to make contact through email. There's no other way we could do this. We're doing the best we can. We just don't have the resources to make 10 different ways to get to us. So people have to figure a way to get the work done that they have to get done to get it to us. I don't know what else to say.
Yeah, I know. That's just been my biggest hang-up. I'm still waiting to get – oh, it's just a disaster. But all I can do is just keep trying. There may be one more person I may be able to try to get some IT help from. I mean, it's not been – that's why – one of the biggest problems with me dragging
my feet. Well, look it. What you need to do, what your first thing you need to do is download a copy of the intake. Even if you download it and print it out, okay, and you got a copy of the intake, you go, you fill out all that information on that paper, you physically go to the court, you get a copy of the docket, they may charge you $10, you pay it, even though you shouldn't, but you have to. And then you write your affidavit to 2 or 3 pages, and now you've got all your paperwork ready. Now get it over to intake. Now, how do you get it into intake? Yeah, now that's where you got to find someone with a computer that can help you by scanning it in. It's not going to take them long to scan it in and email it in for you. It'll take them 10 minutes to scan it and email it for you.
That's the problem. I don't have people to help me. I keep asking and asking, and that's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
I don't know what else to tell you. I mean, we're not set up in any other way to do it other than this. I mean, there's no other way for us to help you. And I understand that that's a problem. I don't know if you can, you might be able to, look at what you might be able to do is get over to a library and have this stuff, they probably have scanners there. You can scan things in and then email them out. That's another way to do it. But you have to find somebody to help you with this thing.
Like a Staples or an Office Max, the old fax.
Well, they used to have Kinko's. I know I can fax. I got places to fax. They used to have Kinko's. It used to be open 24/7 and on Sundays. They're not anymore. I'm working most business hours from Monday through Friday now, so my access is really now cut down. I'll do the best I can, but, I mean, this is what my biggest problem in time is, like you said, it's ticking, right. And you know, I don't want to lose, I can't afford to lose any more time out. I went to the psychiatrist. He gave me 4 false diagnoses. He's recommending to the judge that he court order treatment to have me injected with antipsychotic drugs.
All right. Well, definitely you got to find someone to help you. And I'm sorry, there's, you know, we just are not set up to be able to do anything outside of computers because, you know, it's hard to find enough people to help us do the things we're doing. But with that, we got to move to the next caller. We only got 2 minutes left, and we still have a few callers left.
Okay. Thank you very much. Good luck. Hopefully you'll figure it out.
Yeah, get closer to your mic. You sound distant there, Gerard.
Did it fall off my head again?
Oh, yeah. Something happened.
Okay. Next caller.
1 minute left. 1 minute
unmuted.
Left.
Unmuted. Go ahead. What is that? Hi, Phil.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
I was going to ask, when it comes to the CPS filing into the suit, is child support, does it fall into CPS, or is child support accepted in?
What do you mean?
Is a child support case part of CPS, or is that?
Well, yeah, that's part of the system, too. They don't run according to due process. And most people are more than willing to take care of their children, but the courts get way out of hand and they get ridiculous. And so, yeah, we can help you if you have a situation like that.
Yeah, that's a big, big problem with CPS because they just decimate the fathers. They make
On the right-hand side of our site, you'll see the frowning face instead of a happy face.
Right.
Hold
right.
Up
well, actually,
click on that and follow the bread trail to whatever case you have.
Well, I've actually was trying to help my aunt. My aunt's the one that has this, and it's a – like a 20-year-old child support case, but we sent the paperwork in, and the intake receptionist, I guess, said that you weren't accepting those type of cases.
Oh, because it was 20 years old? It was 20 years old.
Well, she's still going. The case is still active.
And
she hasn't got anything.
But I don't understand. Is she paying or receiving?
No, she's owed. She's owed over.
Oh, okay. We don't chase down those kind of things. I mean, that
okay.
We can deal with.
Okay.
Once we're in the courts, once we get in the courts, we'll deal with every case and anybody that needs restitution and so on. But those look at it, you know, I don't know. The grand jury in that county will have to decide how to go about that case. The person didn't take care of their child, and they're responsible for that, and it's 20 years, but I don't know however the grand jury would deal with that. They'd have to figure that out.
Okay. Well, that's great, and I just wanted to make sure, because I knew that, see, I already have one in that's a false imprisonment, and mm-hmm. I have another one that's a probate case, and I know you guys are taking those, correct?
Right. Yeah, anybody who is any active case that's happening right now where people are being beat up and they're just taking everything they got off of them, or they're being threatened with jail or anything of that nature, of course we take those cases in. But with that, we got to end it because we've come to the end of our program. So
okay, well, thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate it. Thanks.
All right, thank you. Thanks, everyone, for coming. And don't forget, tomorrow evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we have a classroom activity going on right here and learning the processes of paperwork and everything here in 9 p.m. right here in this room. Wednesday we have the national meeting for all state coordinators and even county. Everybody's welcome to come to that meeting, but basically trying to organize the states, and that's what that's all about. 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time again. And, of course, we have Meet the King on Sunday at 11 o'clock in the morning. We're doing a harmony study of the Bibles, the four Gospels. And then again back Monday. So got a lot of things going on. All right. Good night, everybody. Thanks for coming. Appreciate it.